A blue band moves from right to left and forms a circle. A lightning flash. Touchstone home video.
A pale blue line pushes across the black screen and contracts to the circle.
A Touchstone Pictures logo.
A lightning flash strikes the blue circle. Touchstone Pictures presents a Wildwood Enterprises production. The legs of a galloping horse kick up clouds of sand. The Horse Whisperer. The riderless horse gallops on. A breeze whips up a fine spray of sand from a slope, leaving ripples. The horse slows to a walk down the incline, then strides out again, looking almost black in the faint light, and the fine hair of its long tail streams out behind it. As the horse gallops on, puffs of sand are silhouetted against a grey-blue, misty sky. The horse's coat gleams in the half-light, its ears pricked, and its hooves disappearing with every stride in a fog of fine sand. The horse stretches out along a ridge, where it gallops freely, a black shape against the rising sun. Suddenly, the horse has a rider. A girl's legs and jeans grip its flanks, feet hanging loose, without stirrups. On a windowsill stands a china figure of a girl ice skating and another of a horse. In bed, a girl opens her eyes, smiles, and looks up at the window. She pushes aside a patchwork quilt, rolls out of bed, takes a pale blue dressing gown from the bedpost, and puts it on as she goes to the window. The girl, who's about 13, gazes out at snow-covered farmland with bare hills in the background. She smiles again. The girl, now wearing blue jeans stuffed into thick, grey woolen socks and carrying black riding boots, tiptoes to a door and opens it. A man lies in bed asleep. The girl creeps downstairs into a room where she sits and pulls on her boots. She stands, grabs a berry from a nail on the wall, a dark jacket from a peg, and goes out onto a white painted veranda, grinning happily. She straightens the berry and zips up her jacket. A slim woman in her 30s, wearing trainers, grey jogging pants and a dark jacket, slows from a jog to a walk as she crosses the black asphalt of a city street. At a doorway, she bends to pick up a pile of magazines and newspapers and lets herself in. Inside, she runs a hand through her short, straight red-brown hair, strides into the kitchen and pours coffee from a filter machine. Still carrying the papers, she walks quickly to a table by a window, sits, dumps everything on the table, and starts to leaf through the papers. She stops suddenly, staring down. Her photograph stares back. Beside the headline cover, falsifies circulation figures. The caption below her photo reads, "Who me? Bogus."
That's shit.
The girl tramps across a snowy field. 100 yards away, a second girl in a dark brown check jacket throws her arms in the air. Orange light glows on the horizon. The girls tramp on with their arms around each other. The first looks up at her taller friend.
So did you ask him?
Yep, they've been fine.
Oh, good.
She has a care with your mom, though, right?
Yeah, she doesn't care. She's working.
Isn't she coming up this weekend?
I don't know. So, come on, how cute is he? Spit it out.
Oh, he's kind of gorgeous.
Yeah?
He's sort of like a cousin, but not really. He wants to be a forest stranger.
Good, well then after dinner we could set a fire in your room and
you
can come
and
watch us.
You should have seen the look on her face. I'm gonna laugh so hard, I swear to God. I can't believe I'm gonna miss it.
They enter a stable.
Hi, Gulliver. How you doing, boy?
The second girl looks into a stall.
Hey, pilgrim.
The first girl smiles at a chestnut horse with a white blaze on its forehead.
Come here.
Pilgrim nods his head and paws the floor before moving towards her. The girl goes into the stall and looks into Pilgrim's eyes.
Hey, babe. You're such a beautiful boy.
What are you thinking, huh? What are you thinking, boy?
You wanna go for a ride?
She saddles Pilgrim and leads him out.
Let's go for a ride. Come on. Come on, boy. Come on.
The woman steps out of a lift. She strides along a corridor past a glass wall inscribed with the word cover, and enters a dark office. She drops her handbag on the desk, sits, and switches on the light. She pulls off her black leather gloves, finger by finger. Unsmiling, she stares at a framed photo taken at a banquet. It shows her, wearing a sleek, sleeveless black dress and holding what looks like a trophy. Seated on either side of her are the girl and the man who was in the bed at the farmhouse. At the white, clapboard farmhouse, the man is now dressed in a sweater and slacks.
Hello.
It's me.
Hi.
Hi.
So what train are you taking?
I should be in by 2.
Okay. You want me to pick you up?
No, I can take a cab. Grace, go riding?
Mm-hmm. What do you want to do about dinner?
I hadn't thought.
I can ask to try that place in.
Oh, hang on.
I'll let you go. Figure it out when you get here, okay?
Yeah, okay. Okay, bye. Hello?
The girls are out riding.
Please, oh, God, please.
Oh, wait, how are you here?
In the woman's office.
Where are the paintings? It's about her work and we can't even see it.
But we're trying to...
We can change the color of the deck and we can move it up so that
you
can
need
see
to see the paintings. She's an artist.
Have you checked on her going rate?
Yes, the legal department's on that right now.
David!
Did you speak to Felton?
Yes, we're suing.
Well, is that absolutely necessary? It'll just make it a bigger story. Am I in the speaker?
David, he signed an agreement that he wouldn't talk to the press, and now he's libeled me by saying I faked the figures. You're not going soft on me, are you?
Well, nothing like a good public view.
Exactly.
In the country, snow clouds gather.
No, that kid Adam?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Very cute.
I think you'd make a good couple with
Grace. I don't think so.
Oh, I do?
I think
you would crush on him.
Alright, let's take a shortcut.
No, we can't even read it.
Friday is confirmed.
Right, okay. No. We have to reshoot this.
I said it.
I swear to God.
It's bad.
It's bad.
It's bad.
Alright, fine, let's start again, right?
Fine. Alright, I met him at a party. And he told me how to drive. He said he had to do it backwards. I said it.
The horses struggle up a steep slope.
I said it.
Both horses slip and slide in the snow.
Gulliver, up!
Gulliver slides back into Pilgrim, who rears up and falls back down the slope.
Grace, look out!
In slow motion, the horses roll and slide down the slope in a tangle of legs and harness and flurries of snow. Judith falls, striking her head. Her eyes close. In a flashback, the girls meet, laughing and grinning as they walk to the stable. Judith's foot is caught in Gulliver's stirrup, and as he slides down, he drags her with him. They come to a halt on a road, and Grace, on Pilgrim, crashes into them. Pilgrim hauls himself to his feet, with Grace still in the saddle.
Gulliver!
Judith is dragged across the road.
Gulliver! Stop!
A huge truck appears.
Gulliver!
Grace stretches for Gulliver's bridle as the truck hurtles nearer.
Come on!
The truck driver sees the horses and stamps on his brake pedal. The mighty truck skids towards Grace on Pilgrim and Judith, unconscious in the road. Pilgrim rears up in front of the truck, pawing at the windscreen and throwing Grace off. The truck smashes into him and hurls him aside. Its windscreen shattered by Pilgrim's hooves, the truck rolls on. Snow fills the air. Pilgrim struggles. He lifts his head, one leg kicks, and he rises to his feet. A helicopter descends through the swirling snowflakes. The woman bursts through a swing door in a white hospital corridor. She looks around frantically and runs towards the man who's talking to a doctor.
What?
The man looks at her, grim-faced and frowning.
Judith's dead.
And what about Grace?
She's in pretty bad shape.
It's a multiple trauma.
Where is she?
She's still in the OR.
Whoa, what for?
Anderson. Mid-shaft tib-fib fracture with a vascular compromise, meaning the blood supply to the lower leg.
They have to take part of the leg off.
Grace's parents stare at one another. Her mother glances away, controlling herself, and then looks at the doctor.
Which leg?
The right leg.
She runs her tongue over her lips, her eyes avoiding the man's stare. A broken branch and shattered twigs hang by the side of the road. A trail of red patches stains the churned-up snow. Sunlight filters through the trees as the snow continues to fall. Under a bridge, spanning a shallow stream, stands Pilgrim. A woman peers in at him.
Oh, Jesus.
A triangular flap of bloody skin hangs from Pilgrim's chest, and he has a huge, deep wound on his face. The woman takes a hypodermic from her pocket. Two men close in. One carries a gun.
Just take it easy. This is going to be tough on both of us. So let's not make it any harder than it has to be.
He approaches slowly. Pilgrim rears up. The woman stabs at him with a hypodermic before she's tumbled over into the stream. Pilgrim charges out from the bridge, up a slope, and gallops off through the forest. In the hospital, Grace's eyes flicker open. A white cloth is draped over her forehead. Her father, looking out of focus, peers down at her. Her mother removes the cloth and takes it to the side of the room. Grace's fair hair lies in waves over the white bedclothes.
Yeah.
Grace's father leans forward and strokes her forehead. Her mother returns to the bed and replaces the now wet cloth. She looks up at the intravenous drip bag.
That bag's almost empty.
Oh, they'll be interchanging.
Leave it up to these people. Excuse me. My daughter needs a new IV.
Yes, I know. We have her down.
Well, I'd like it taken care of now, please. Have to stay on top of these people constantly.
Grace's father looks up at the blonde nurse.
I'm sorry.
The nurse smiles. Grace's mother glares at him.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The parents exchange another angry look.
We really should let her get some rest, and I do have to change the bandage. You can come back in a couple of hours and see how she's doing.
Grace's father leaves the room. Her mother's lips tighten, and she follows slowly. The nurse closes the door. Grace's mother stands outside and watches the nurse pull back the bedclothes. A white bandage covers the stump of Grace's right leg, amputated below the knee.
Mrs. McLean?
Mrs. McLean, you have a call on line 2. You can take it right there.
Grace's mother picks up a wall phone.
Hello? Annie, it's Liz. How's Grace?
Her leg was very damaged and they had to remove it.
Oh, God, Annie, I'm so sorry. Listen, I know that you're being hit with a lot now, and it's hard
to think about anything else, but I have to talk to you about Pilgrim.
Annie is staring in at Grace.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
I've never seen an animal with these injuries still breathing.
I'd like your permission to put him down.
It's really the best thing we can do.
You mean shoot him?
Annie.
Well, look, Liz, the doctor's here right now, and I can't make this decision on my own.
Annie, I understand that, but I have to...
Just do what you can, okay?
Annie, no matter what I do, this horse will
never be the same.
Well, look, I just don't know. It's Grace's
horse, so when she...
It's not right to make...
I cannot deal with this now, Liz. If you need a yes or a no, then don't do it, okay? Just do what you can.
I am, okay?
Right.
Pilgrim lies in the snow, surrounded by a group of men.
Animal should be put down. Anybody can see that.
At the hospital.
What did he say?
I think he's just going off duty.
Well, that's important information, huh? Christ. Doctors. I'm going to get to know all the nurses' names.
Annie frowns. Nods, trying to stave off tears.
It's good to know that.
Her face crumples, and she throws herself into her husband's arms. He holds her, staring past her and frowning.
I'll go get some of her things.
I'll go.
No. I'll go. You stay. Then she wakes up.
In a vet's surgery, Liz, in jeans and a white coat, is dozing on a chair outside a pair of tall gray doors. She stands and looks through an observation window. Inside a stall, Pilgrim is lying on his side, his forelegs, face and chest heavily bandaged. He kicks at the walls and lifts his head to look at her. Night. In her dark hospital room, Grace is sleeping peacefully, her head on one side. A nurse checks her drip bag and leaves. From high up in an apartment building, the trees of Central Park form a broad green barrier against the rest of New York. Below, a long black limousine draws up in front of the building. The doorman steps forward and opens the door. Grace's parents get out, and her father holds the car door for Grace. While she's sitting, the pink plastic of her prosthetic leg is visible between her trousers and shoes. She struggles out, leaning on crutches.
You guys go on ahead. I'll be up by Christmas.
Grace's crutches are leaning against the dining table.
I meant to tell you, I got those tickets for the Knicks game.
Good.
Want to come, Annie?
No. Why don't you go with a friend, Grace?
Yeah.
You want to eat something else, honey? We can order out something else.
No, I'm just not that hungry, that's all.
Well, you should try to eat anyway. It's the only way you're going to get
this. I said I wasn't hungry.
You want to watch some television?
I think she should finish
Maybe.
First.
Maybe. I can't.
Here.
I'm sorry.
Grace stands and stumbles.
No, Dad, I got it.
Sorry.
Her father sits. Annie carefully straightens the white linen cloth and brushes invisible crumbs from it. In their bathroom, Annie, in pajamas, is brushing her hair. Her husband leans on his wash basin.
You've got to stop doing that.
What?
Helping her all the time. Running to her every time she trips, anticipating her.
No, Annie. This didn't just happen to you.
He looks at her grimly and leaves. Annie stops brushing her hair and stares into the mirror. A finger to her lips. Kids queue outside a high school.
Would you get on my
Grace.
Other girls look at Grace unsympathetically as she hobbles along on her crutches and hoists herself up a flight of stone steps. In her office, Annie talks to staff.
I don't care what he told you. The man's a liar. He's an actor, for God's sake. Do anything to get a cover.
She reads a note she's been handed. Annie trots up the steps outside Grace's school. She glances to her left and sees Grace sitting on a covered pathway, leaning back against the red brick wall. Annie hurries through a formal garden, drops her bag beside Grace, squats, and kisses her forehead. Grace, in a heavy overcoat and blue roll neck, looks at her and shuts her eyes.
Gracie, what happened?
It doesn't matter, just... I don't want to come back, that's all.
Well, what are you going to do? I mean, you have to go to school, sweetheart.
I said no. I don't want to go back, that's it. I want to go home.
Grace, listen to me. Your leg is just healing and you have to give the rest of your time as well.
Grace stares straight into her mother's face.
Is that your version of a pep talk?
Well, you're not staying home all day feeling sorry for yourself. You're going to get up and you're going to figure this out.
Fine.
It's still early. What's your next class?
Gym.
Grace is in bed, propped up on pillows, watching a home video of her younger self riding Pilgrim round a show jumping course. She's clasping the video container to her chest. She zaps the music with a remote. As Grace watches herself smoothly guiding Pilgrim over the jumps, her lips quiver, her chest heaves, and she blinks hard as her eyes fill with tears. Anne is sitting on the edge of her bed, chin in hand, while her husband places the contents of his trouser pockets on the top of a chest of drawers. Grace appears in the doorway, still wearing her blue-grey check pajamas and on crutches.
What is it, sweetheart?
I want to see Pilgrim.
A dark blue Range Rover, headlights on, rolls down a straight, narrow lane between wooden fences. It pulls up in the stable yard. Grace and her parents, all wearing heavy waterproofs, get out. Her father holds an umbrella for Grace, who is only using one crutch. Liz, holding a jacket up over her head, comes out to meet them and leads them into the dim, shadowy stable block.
Hello!
Hi.
Hi. It's so good to see you. How are you doing?
I'm just doing just great. How'd you get
up? I'm fine. Watch your step. Mind how you go. It's muddy back there.
Back there? Well, what do you mean? Why isn't he in the barn with the other horses?
Liz, who has a wide oval face and short brown hair, stares at Grace's parents and turns to her.
Well, Grace, you see, Pilgrim just isn't the same horse that he used to be. As a matter of fact, maybe now's not the best time for you to see him.
I really want to see him.
Liz looks at Annie, eyebrows raised. Annie gives a very slight nod, and Liz leads the way through the stables, hauling open a big sliding door at the far end. In a wide stall, behind a wire mesh door, stands Pilgrim, side onto them. Grace looks through the mesh, almost smiling.
Can you open it, please?
Liz opens the door, and Grace moves slowly into the stall, with her parents just behind her.
Hello, beautiful boy.
Pilgrim turns, revealing the terrible deep wound on his face, still dark red and unhealed.
No, no, oh God, no, no, no,
Grace.
No, no, leave me alone. Here.
Annie stares at Pilgrim.
Grace.
Grace the plague. I'm so sorry.
Her father leads Grace out of the stables. Liz returns to Annie, who's gazing at Pilgrim.
You should have told her, Annie. This animal is beyond help. Annie, can I have your permission now to put him down?
Annie's hazel green eyes look steadily at Pilgrim.
No.
Annie strides into her office.
I'm getting every publication on riding, racing, breeding, everything. Medical publications as well, veterinarian journals. You tell them it's me and I want it now.
Gotchuk.
I'll call him back.
He says he's on his way to the airport.
You see, I'll call him back. I'll call him back. Just get me what I want.
With a book on horses open beside her, Annie searches the internet, clicking on a site called equisearch.com. She sips coffee from a cardboard cup, staring through her oval, gold-framed spectacles at the computer screen. Finding the heading trauma, injury, she clicks on that. Piles of magazines and books, all to do with horses, stack up on her desk. She flicks through an old book, cave paintings of horses in shades of grey and brown.
A million years before man, they grazed the vast empty plains, living by voices only they could hear. They first came to know man as the hunted knows the hunter.
A drawing of an ancient Egyptian hunting chariot gives way to a black and white photo of a teepee covered with horse images.
For long before he used horses for his labors, he killed them for meat.
After a pile of dead horses, a wild horse is roped.
The alliance with man would forever be fragile.
Pilgrim stands at his stall, head drooping.
For the fear he'd struck into their hearts was too deep to be dislodged.
Grace lies in bed, awake.
Since that Neolithic moment when a horse was first halted, there were those among men who understood this.
Annie reads an article on horse whispering.
They could see into the creature's soul and soothe the wounds they found there. The secrets uttered softly into troubled ears.
The name Tom Booker features prominently.
These men were known as the Whisperers.
A photo shows a cowboy in a white hat speaking to a horse. An editorial conference.
It's perfectly shot, perfectly cropped, perfectly laid out, and I am so bloody bored. Start again.
A note is passed to her.
Thank you. Would you excuse me for a minute?
She goes to the phone as her staff leave the office.
Hello?
Yeah, this is Tom Booker. I got a message you called.
Oh, hello, Mr. Booker. It's Annie McLean from Cover.
You know, the magazine. Well, thank you for returning.
Is there something I can do for you, ma'am?
Yes, yes.
I read this article about what you do for people with horse problems.
Well, truth is, I help horses with people problems.
Well, whichever way you want to put it. This article said that you were a horse whisperer.
Oh, they said that, huh? A whisperer. Hmm.
And I was hoping that you'd come to New York and take a look at my daughter's
horse and possibly do something.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but I'm afraid you misunderstood whatever it is you read, because that's not exactly what I do. I mostly conduct clinics.
Well, could you come to New York just for the day?
It's only a few hours.
I'm not doing them now. I'm on my way to Montana, where I have a ranch to take care of.
Well, I pay your fare, of course, first class.
And first class to Montana is a waste of good money.
Well, if you could just give me a time when you'd be available.
Say, am I being too polite here when I say no in Nevada?
Does that mean yes where you are? Now, look, I'm really sorry for your situation, but there's nothing I can do.
You just called the wrong person is all. I'm sure there's some fine horse doctors back east.
No, but I don't want a horse doctor.
I hope everything goes okay with you and your horse.
Well, but you see, it's not my horse.
So goodbye now.
Tom Booker walks away from the payphone by the side of the road. At the McLean's house.
Grace? Grace, it's Mom.
Annie slowly enters Grace's bedroom. Grace is sitting in the dark, staring out of the window.
Grace? Grace? Are you all right?
Annie sits. Grace doesn't look around at her.
I've decided about Pilgrim.
Oh.
I think we should put him down. It's not fair to let him suffer.
Well, I think that's
maybe they should put me down, too.
What?
I'm not much use anymore. You're getting a fax.
Annie lifts the sash window, leans out, breathes deeply. Annie is sitting at the kitchen table, chin in hand. Her husband comes in, taking off his dinner jacket.
You're up late.
Is it? How was the dinner?
Grace asleep?
Yeah, I think so.
Nothing we haven't heard before, just louder this time, that's all.
He takes fruit juice from the fridge.
So why'd you go?
Well, one of us had to. Still our friends, Annie.
He takes out his cufflinks, puts them carefully on the glass-topped table, and leans on it.
Listen, I had a thought. What do you think we go someplace warm, the three of us? Bermuda or the Bahamas or what?
He opens a cupboard door as Annie looks away, distracted.
No, I just don't know if Bermuda would be such a good idea. Grace would have to wear summer dresses or shorts.
Oh, yeah. Of course. What is it?
I want to take Pilgrim out to see this horse guy. Drive him out to Montana. No, I'm serious.
Now, wait a minute. I thought you said you didn't like the way he sounded on the phone.
Well, I didn't. I want to take Grace with me.
You're kidding.
Liz will find me a trader. We can stay at motels along the way.
You made arrangements already?
No, I just checked out a few things, you know.
Wait a minute. Drive a crazed horse.
Oh, he's not crazed, Robert. Don't exaggerate.
No, I can't just pack up and leave.
Well, I'm not asking you to. I'll do it.
By yourself? How? You can't take care of Pilgrim.
You'll be sedated. I do know a thing or two about horses.
What about the magazine?
I'm in charge. I can oversee things from Montana.
Oh, you're in charge. But what about Grace? The doctor says she needs stability.
Well, I can't say he's being all that effective with her.
Are you a psychiatrist? He says it takes time.
Well, I don't care what he says. I cannot sit here and pretend everything's going to be all right.
I am not pretending. I am trusting
in
people who know more about this than we do.
We are losing her.
I don't care what the doctors say. They don't know her. I don't care if this doesn't sound rational. Nobody is suggesting anything better. I can't explain it, Robert. I just have this feeling. I just know it's the right thing.
Why, Annie?
Robert, leaning with one hand on the table, one on his hip, stares angrily at Annie, who meets his gaze with equal strength.
I just know it.
Annie turns and sits.
Does this cowboy vet know that you're coming?
Yeah.
What if Grace doesn't want to go?
She will if you think she should.
And you think it's best if I don't come?
No, that's not what I said.
Daddy?
Grace stands in the doorway, wearing her pale blue dressing gown.
I don't want
to
go.
A trailer backs up to the stables. Stable hands try to grab Pilgrim.
Hold it! Back!
That's it! Here goes, Eddie!
Why don't you get inside?
Please!
We're doing it fast. You're
on my way to load this kind of horse.
Maybe we should give another sedative. We did.
They open the stall door. Pilgrim races through the stables into the trailer. The door is slammed shut.
You got a gun just in case? Of course not. That's probably best. You may want to shoot yourself halfway to Ohio.
In the Range Rover, Grace plays her Walkman. The dark blue car hauls the trailer across a wide suspension bridge. Criss-cross girders make a lattice pattern above the road. They cross a similar but smaller bridge. The freeway spans a steep valley with a narrow stream running through it. Rain streams down the windscreen. In the back seat, Grace, wearing a denim shirt with her fair hair pulled back off her face, is leaning on the window, staring out miserably. Annie, her delicately boned face lightly made up as always, and wearing her spectacles, is tapping the steering wheel and biting her lip. Huge lorries thunder by them on both sides. Annie's face looks strained. Behind her, Grace looks increasingly tense. In the trailer, Pilgrim shies away from the noises. A truck, just like the one that hit Pilgrim, hurtles past. From high above, the road they're on makes a dead straight line through flat green country.
Grace, are you hungry? Do you want to stop for lunch?
I don't care.
Fields in strips of alternating green and yellow border the road.
I want to find a place before it gets dark. What do you think? Grace?
Doesn't matter.
Annie's on her mobile.
Okay, Lucy, look, this is what I'll do. I'll get to the next motel, see if they have a fax, and then... Oh, wait, hang on. I gotta go. Okay,
the trailer is swaying violently, preventing the cars behind from passing.
Grace, do you want to put your music on up here?
Grace just stares out of the window. Annie, wearing sunglasses, looks back at her.
Grace!
Grace lifts the headphones from one ear.
Do you want to put your music on up here?
Grace replaces the headphone. Annie shakes her head and fiddles with the car radio.
And when you purchase your Eureka World Deluxe vacuum here, the agricultural markets and farm news headlines continue to...
Insecticide for small grains. Important. Always read and follow label instructions.
Is it a man was rejuvenated in the grace of the Lord?
From high above, the trailer looks like a white beetle, alone on the thin road snaking through wheat prairie, which gives way to green fields and jagged gray mountains.
Grace, look at this.
Grace looks out at a sign reading Little Bighorn Battlefield.
Do you want to see that?
I don't care.
As she repeats the phrase, Annie pulls a face.
Oh, it'll be fun. You haven't seen any of the sights yet. It's history. When I was 13, I used to love doing things like this.
Oh, you were never 13, Mom?
Grace continues to flick through a comic. They turn off the main road. Gates across the road carry a closed sign. Grace looks up from her comic.
Great idea, Mom. Now what?
How long is this gonna go on?
What?
You know what I mean.
Grace opens her door. Annie gets out and marches round to face her.
Do you want us to go back home? Is that what you want?
What are you asking me for? You didn't ask me if I wanted to come in the first place. Now I get to decide. Sorry.
Do you know who I'm doing this for? I'm doing this for you.
Bullshit! It's all about you deciding, about you being right. It looks like we work for you or
something. I don't believe this!
How come Daddy didn't come, huh?
What do you mean?
You know everything. You figure it out.
Your father had to work.
Yeah, right.
Would you please stop acting like you know what you're talking
about? You are amazing, you know? I mean, you act like I don't even live in that house anymore. What, you think I don't know what's going on? You think I'm still 5 years old?
When you act like this, you are.
How long are we going to be away, huh?
I don't know.
Yeah, well, what if this guy doesn't
do
anything, huh?
I don't know! I don't have all the answers.
No, you just act like you do.
Annie stares at her for a moment, wide-eyed. Annie grabs a white padded coat from the front seat, dragging it on as she pushes through a gate. From the back seat, Grace watches her pass by a low building set amongst trees. Heavy, dark grey clouds cover the sky, apart from a rim of blue round the horizon. Arms folded, Annie tramps up a slight incline towards a stone obelisk. She slows to look at it and moves on past the memorial and the stone wall around it. She comes to a halt in front of a line of chest-high railings. Beyond the fence, low grey headstones are dotted about amongst thin tufts of grass and patches of purple heather. Annie's face is tense. Her hands are clenched around the railings. Her head drops and she sinks to her knees. She slides into a sitting position, leaning sideways against the railings, and puts both hands to her face. The blue rim of sky turns briefly golden, darkens, and finally, a full moon shines through long black streamers of cloud. A worried-looking ranger shines his torch into Annie's face.
You okay, ma'am?
Yeah, I'm fine.
That young lady's getting a little worried.
Oh, sorry.
The ranger's torch lights them back through the park.
Good night, ma'am.
Night.
Annie climbs into the driver's seat. She and Grace look at each other, unsmiling.
You buckled up? You cold?
A little?
Annie puts on her glasses and seatbelt and throws a rug over Grace's knees. Daylight. They drive through mountain country.
You may have seen the Kennel Club champion being rewarded with a box of chocolates the other day. Veterinarians and humane...
The road winds through hills covered with dark clumps of conifers. Further on, it climbs into the mountains, where grey stone bursts through the thick snow.
Well, looks like lots of precipitation, as we mentioned overnight. Great falls, an inch and a half, plus it looks like about another half an inch.
He had an epiphany. Paul had been transformed by the grace of God, so he was a new creation in Christ. His inner man was completely...
Hop on down to Northern Plains, John Deere. We'll be glad to see you.
The car and trailer come to a stop at a crossroads. The surrounding country is empty and treeless, the grass pale green, with a few outcrops of rock.
Gee, this place looks like fun.
Annie screws up her eyes and stares out at the featureless green landscape.
Don't they believe in signs around here?
What would they say? 10 miles to Big Rock, 20 miles to Bigger Rock?
No.
Great trip, Mom. I'm having so much fun.
I think I should turn here.
Well, yeah, those rocks over there, much more interesting.
They turn left along another straight road. Dusk. The car lights glow through dark trees. A flashing neon sign proclaims the Lazy J Motel. In the pale early morning sun, Annie, in her jogging gear, crosses the motel yard to their room. She stops at the door and looks in through the window. Inside, Grace is stepping up onto a box without her crutches. Grace wobbles slightly and slips. Annie's eyes close and she glances away as if in pain. The Range Rover, now not towing the trailer, is grey with dust. Inside, Annie peers at a sketch map scrawled on a postcard. She drives slowly along a dusty, red dirt road, winding through rolling, featureless country. Ahead, a range of mountains rears up, misty, grey and white. Annie stops the car, looking around almost desperately. More mountains loom on her left. The car moves off again down a gentle slope, leaving dust in its wake. Leather-gloved hands secure a rope around a cow's leg.
Can we take a look at Bronnie's foal when we're done here, Dad?
Sure, as long as you don't mind.
There's this kid at school. Says we should have imprint trained him. Says if you do it as soon as they're born, it makes them real easy to handle later on.
That's what some folks say.
There's this thing on the TV about a guy who does it with geese. He has this airplane, and these baby geese all grow up thinking it's their mom. And he flies it, and they just follow. You hear about that, Uncle T?
Yeah, heard about it.
Well, what do you think about all that stuff?
Well, I tell you, Joey, it might be all right for geese to grow up thinking they're airplanes. Horses, as far as I can tell, can't fly.
Tom Booker grins at Joey, who's on horseback.
We expecting company?
And his car pulls up. Tom watches Annie get out, white coat in hand. Joey's father looks at Tom.
You know who it is?
Nope.
Annie puts on her coat, walks a few paces, and stops.
Mr. Booker?
Yeah?
Tom Booker?
Joey's dad looks at Tom, who throws a coiled rope over a post and walks slowly towards Annie. The other Mr. Booker goes back to stroking a black calf, suckling the cow that Tom had tied. Tom's hat is tipped back, revealing reddish hair.
Annie McLean from New York. We talked on the phone. I had a little bit of a hard time finding the place. There are no signs.
Oh, there are plenty of signs, just not many of them printed. Why do I get the impression that you're just not driving through?
I want you to take a look at my horse. Now, it won't take long, and if you still feel the same way, then I'm sure I can find
you. You thinking about personally driving me back east?
Oh, no. No, I brought him along and my daughter, too. We're at the Lazy J Motel.
You hauled him all the way out here?
Well, yeah. I had a trailer. It's not like I made him run alongside the car.
By yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Well, ma'am, I appreciate the pains that you've obviously...
Look, please don't do the shucks, ma'am, thing again. I have just driven a few thousand miles for a few minutes of your time. I have brought him all the way out here. Just take a look at him. If you still feel the same way, I will be on the road by morning and you'll never hear from me again, okay? Deal?
Tom gives a slight smile.
We're at the Lazy J Motel. Whenever you're free.
You don't have to call.
Annie strides back to the car. Tom turns away.
Jeez.
As Annie drives off, a broad-faced woman of perhaps 40 steps out onto the white-painted veranda and watches her go. In the motel room, Grace is watching TV.
This is what you call the boonies.
Mom, the door!
No services. There's one doctor in town. I managed to find a therapist for Grace. I had to drive like two
With hours. Annie in the next room, Grace, in shorts, walks unsteadily to the door.
Do they have any kind of directions?
Yeah.
I'm Tom Booker. Is your mother around?
She's on the phone. She'll be right out.
Mom, there's a cowboy here.
Grace returns to the TV, followed by Tom.
This is not Gottschalk's business. Why is he interfering with this? I told him I'd take care of it. No, I told him I'd take care of it. I will take care of it. I just have to get myself settled here. Put in the memo and...
Tom observes Grace trying to hide her prosthetic leg.
This is your first time in Montana?
Grace nods.
It's completely ridiculous. It's completely ridiculous. Yeah. I can imagine. They are?
Then why did you go to meet him? Alone, secretly, all dressed up.
That's funny. No, really? I can't believe that.
Is she going to be long?
Probably. She's on the phone 23 hours a day.
What does she do?
She's an editor.
Editor?
Just in case she hasn't told you, which she probably hasn't, I don't want to be a part of this, okay?
Thank you.
Tom nods, and Annie comes in.
Hi. Sorry about that. Grace, this is Mr. Booker. Did you look at Pilgrim yet?
I was going to take that look now.
Would you like me to come with you? I have to run over to the office and give Mr. Peterson a check.
Doesn't matter.
Grace, do you want to come with us? Take a look at Pilgrim?
Probably best she stay behind, Amy.
Grace flashes a quick look at Tom, her jaw set firmly. Tom, in a clean denim jacket, jeans and white Stetson, crosses the yard, stopping in front of a balding man sitting out in the sun.
Howdy, Lester.
Howdy. Going to see that horse?
Yeah, I thought I might.
Well, I hope you got insurance. That dirty son of a bitch.
In her room, Grace frantically reaches under her bed for a walking stick. Tom opens the yard gate, shuts it behind him, and walks over to Pilgrim's stall. The horse is standing quietly behind a chest-high door as Tom approaches and reaches for the latch. Pilgrim rears up, smashing at the door with his front hooves. Tom grabs a coil of rope and shakes it at the horse, who backs off. Tom opens the door and moves gingerly into the stall. He watches Pilgrim carefully, still holding the rope, and gently moves around to the side of the horse. Horse and man eye each other. Suddenly, Tom flicks the rope at Pilgrim's rump, and the horse gallops out into the yard. Tom walks slowly from the dark stall into the sunny yard, watching Pilgrim, whose back and face are plastered with mud. As Tom gets closer, Pilgrim drops his head and paws the straw-covered ground. Tom squats in front of Pilgrim, who rolls his eyes. Annie walks up to the yard fence, followed by Grace, using a metal walking stick. Tom looks up at Pilgrim, taking in the state of his coat, the still raw wound on his face, the dirty, wiry hair of his mane. And he winces slightly when he spots the dark, triangular scar on his chest. He looks into Pilgrim's eyes, observing the nervous twitch of the horse's muddy neck. Annie smiles as she watches, and Grace joins her at the fence. Tom lobs a small pebble at Pilgrim's leg. The horse skitters away, sideways, then shakes his head up and down. Tom holds his hands wide, and the horse calms down. Only Grace's eyes show above the fence as she watches unemotionally. Pilgrim shows the whites of his eyes again. Tom stands slowly and walks away, backwards at first. Then he turns and heads for the yard gate.
Well, you're the closest anyone's ever gotten.
Tom hangs up the coil of rope and slips through the gate.
I have to be honest with you. I still feel you made a long trip for nothing.
Grace, who's standing behind Annie, looks away, her hand to her chin. Annie frowns and bites her lower lip.
But before I even think about it, I need to know something right now. And it's a question for Grace. You see, when I work with a horse, it's no good just me doing it. The owner's got to be involved, too.
Well, that'll be a little complicated.
You can make it as complicated or as easy as you like. But she's the one that's going to be riding him. Am I right?
He stares at Grace, who turns away sharply.
Hey, right? Now, here's the deal. I don't know that I can do anything. But I'm prepared to give it a go, if you'll help. Well, you have a problem with that?
Isn't it, like, obvious?
Not to me. Either you want to, or you don't.
Look, I'll talk to
Grace. Excuse me, with all due respect, this is her decision, not yours.
Grace glances at Annie, then back at Tom.
Now, I don't want to waste anybody's time here. Mostly mine.
Well, nothing else to do around here.
That's not good enough. I can't help you.
Tom turns and walks away. Grace looks at her mother.
What do I have to do?
I said, what do I have to do?
Tom stops and turns back. Dinner at the Booker's Ranch.
Well, what does she want?
Does she want you to take care of her horse?
Something like that.
And they're staying in the motel?
Lazy Drake. Crab and butter, please.
Mm-hmm. Not exactly a tourist stop.
Well, what about the girl? Doesn't she go to school?
I don't know.
No, I just think she's got a lot of nerves showing up here. Dragging that, you know, poor animal and that child all the way. Honey, don't eat with your fingers. Frank, don't you think she's got a lot of nerve?
Well, I don't know. According to Tom, she's a pretty determined woman. Just thought it was worth it.
Yeah, well, I guess they want feeding, being out here all day long.
I don't think they'll expect that.
What, they're going to drive 40 miles into town every time they want a hamburger?
It's mixed salad.
What?
Well, I believe women from New York eat mixed salads. Ain't that right, Tom?
I believe so.
Well, that's just what we need, a vegetarian from New York on our cattle ranch.
Her husband grins.
A great traveler, in distinction to a merely good one, is a kind of introspective. As she covers the ground outwardly, so she advances towards fresh interpretations of herself inwardly. And this is the quality which lends Freya star.
Tom pours himself coffee, steals a homemade cookie, and walks upstairs.
Moreover, it is this quality which makes them as fresh and striking.
He drops a pocket watch and keys on a table in his room and puts on a record. He sips from his coffee cup, his lined face thoughtful. He moves over to a desk and sits. He's wearing an olive green flannel shirt, sleeves down, and his fine red blonde hair sweeps across his forehead. He puts on horn-rimmed spectacles, pulls a ledger and some vouchers towards him, and begins writing. On a sunny morning, Tom, in a fawn canvas jacket and light-coloured Stetson, pushes open the gate of a circular pen, a corral in a paddock. It's perhaps 20 yards in diameter, with a wooden fence as high as his head. As Tom moves around the edge of the corral, Pilgrim tosses his head, paws the ground, and backs away. Pilgrim trots up to Tom, throwing his head in the air. Tom sways back. Pilgrim charges him again. Tom sways again. Head on one side, he strokes the corner of his mouth with his thumb, moves towards the horse, who turns and gallops around the edge of the corral. Tom flicks a length of rope at Pilgrim, keeping him at the gallop. Outside the corral, Frank steps up onto the bottom rail, rests his forearms on the top one and watches. Tom keeps Pilgrim, whose coat is still crusted with mud, moving steadily. Grace watches from between the two top rails. At last, Tom stops Pilgrim running and climbs over the fence beside Frank.
You had a good place to quit?
Oh, I gotta move it out a bit, that's about it. Still a long ways away from getting the leg over.
Again, Pilgrim trots around the corral and Tom smiles happily. Held on a long rope, Pilgrim wades through a chest-deep pond, watched by Tom in blue shirt and white Stetson. The work of the ranch continues, herding cattle, making huge cylindrical bales of hay, and Frank and Tom mend a barbed wire fence. Three ranch hands stride down a grassy slope, and a white-painted chapel with a green roof and small conical bell tower sits in a field with the mountains behind. Tom enters the corral, hatless, in a pale blue shirt, holding his coiled rope. On another, sunnier day, he stands in the center of the corral, Stetson on, in a darker blue shirt, banging the coil of rope against his thigh and keeping Pilgrim galloping, turning, and galloping again. The mud still clings to Pilgrim's chestnut coat, but he moves easily, without panic. Held from both sides by a rope, Pilgrim is wading through the pond. Annie arrives, wearing dark sunglasses, her red hair gleaming in the sun, and papers clasped to her chest.
What's he doing?
Young Joey in his white curly-brimmed Stetson looks round at her, then back at the horse. Tom is squatting by the pond.
Is this some kind of physical therapy?
Grace looks with weary contempt at her mother and turns away. Pilgrim rears.
Hello? Hello? No, you're breaking up.
Hold on, hold on. I must got a fight with him. Joey, on your rope. Just to pull him back, we'll never get him out of there.
Let me go in after him.
Pilgrim clambers to the edge of the pond, then rears up, pawing the air in front of Tom. The horse stands still, and Tom takes hold of his bridle. Watched anxiously by Joey and Grace, he begins, very gently, to slip a short rope through the bridle.
Mr. Booker, I'm really not comfortable with you taking these kind of risks.
Tom glances at Annie. He pats the horse and carefully releases the long rope from Pilgrim's neck and starts to lead him out of the pond. The horse rears, barging Tom into the water.
Oh, God!
Hey, Pilgrim!
Let him go! Let him go!
Tom picks himself up and pushes back his hair. His light blue shirt has dark, wet patches. He walks out of the pond, past Annie and Joey, ignoring everyone, following Pilgrim. Pilgrim stands in a wide plain of long grass with the mountains behind. Hills rise to his left, and a clump of trees stands to his right. Big, fluffy grey and white clouds drift above. Joey and Grace, who's wearing khaki dungarees, follow Tom and sit on a little rise above the plain, with a rainbow behind them. Tom stops, perhaps 200 yards from the horse. Joey looks at Grace's prosthetic leg.
Does that hurt you? Only when I kick somebody?
The boy grins, and after a moment, Grace smiles back.
Don't you go to school? Taking a break? Don't you?
School terms out early for us, so we can work the ranch.
He looks at Pilgrim, standing calmly in the tall grass, gently swishing his tail. Tom also gazes at the horse and slowly sits in the grass.
Look at him out in the pasture. He must have been a big, beautiful-looking horse. How was he to ride?
Grace looks at Joey unsmilingly and looks away.
Excuse me, I've got chores to look after.
The boy stands, still carrying his lasso, and leaves Grace, who glances down as if in thought. Tom is sitting in the golden evening sunlight, watching Pilgrim grazing. Behind the horse, the mountains are misty green. Annie is standing behind Tom.
Are we in the way?
Tom half turns to her, opens his mouth, then turns back to the horse, who lifts his head and looks in their direction.
Should we leave? I guess we'll go then.
She turns away. Shadows from the trees stretch out over Pilgrim. Beyond him, the grass is rich yellow in the sunlight. A breeze stirs through the feathery grass and ruffles Tom's hair. The light in the sky is pinker now. Tom still sits motionless, but Pilgrim is closer to him. Dusk. In the grey, shadowless light, Pilgrim stands 20 yards from Tom, not quite facing him, but watching the man, who smiles at him. Pilgrim moves closer. The Range Rover draws up some way behind Tom. In the pale light glowing through a crack between the dark hills and the clouds, Pilgrim walks towards Tom. Annie stops walking and watches. Pilgrim stops a few feet from Tom. The scar on his face is smaller, and the skin is healing. He comes closer to Tom, who gazes up, but doesn't move. Pilgrim moves right up to Tom and lowers his head, almost nuzzling the man. Tom takes hold of Pilgrim's bridle, looks into the horse's eyes, and slowly stands. He strokes Pilgrim's face gently, then turns and leads him away. As they approach Annie, she smiles slightly.
From now on, leave your phone somewhere else.
They walk past her, and her smile disappears. In the yard, Frank is leading his white horse away. His wife lifts a saddle blanket from the fence and looks over at Annie.
Miss McLean, would you and your daughter like to stay for dinner?
Annie smiles momentarily, then glances at the retreating Tom and stops smiling. At dinner.
Joe, take off your hat at the table. I don't want to say it again.
Joe takes off his hat while his mother puts down a dish of mashed potatoes and sits. Grace starts to unfold her napkin. Frank puts his hands together.
Dear Lord, we are humbly thankful for these gifts, for the blessings on our home, our family, and our guests. And bless those that aren't as fortunate. Bless all God's creatures. Amen.
Amen.
That's roast beef.
Grace takes roast beef as everyone helps themselves and dishes are passed around the table.
Thank you.
Frank and his wife are sitting at either end of the table, Grace and Annie side by side opposite Joe and Tom, who glances over at Annie as she takes some vegetables.
Got some milk?
Yeah.
Grace smiles at Frank's wife, who pours milk from a tall, frosted glass jug.
Well, Hank got us a couple more men to move the cattle.
And what kind of cattle do you raise, Mr. Booker?
Well, we run a mixed herd, but mostly black baldies.
Now, what are those?
Black Angus Herefords. Instead of straight Herefords.
Oh, black Angus.
There you go.
Of course. And what's the difference?
Well, they suit the weather better.
Their udders are black instead of pink.
They don't get burnt with the sun bouncing off the snow.
They make good mothers.
Our daddy raised straight Herefords.
You know, that's interesting. I've always wondered every time when I go into a restaurant, what's the difference between a regular steak and a black Angus steak? I can never taste the difference, but I could swear that one was more tender than the other. I didn't know there's that much difference between the cows. Of course, I'd never been on a cow farm before. Seems to me that the bulls have the best of the time, just laying around the fields waiting for somebody to come along and ask them to do their work.
You get born a bull, got a 90% chance of getting castrated, served up as hamburger, so on balance, I reckon I'd choose being a cow.
Yeah. Hey, young man.
You get back up to bed!
A small boy in white pajamas peeking through the banisters scampers upstairs.
So how's the lazy Jay holding up for you?
Oh, it's fine. I still can't get used to how dark it gets around here, though. Every time I leave the ranch, I hold my breath until I can see the motel.
Well, by golly, that's a lot of drive time.
Mm-hmm. Yo, Tom, while you're working on that horse of theirs, Annie and Grace should move into the old Creek house.
Tom, with a forkful of food poised midair, stares at Frank. Annie looks quickly around the table. Frank's wife is glaring at him.
Nobody's using it. It's silly for her to be driving back and forth when she don't know her way around that well.
Well, that's very kind of you, but really we're fine where we are.
Oh, hell, look, I know the Lazy J. Whole place is as good as falling down around your ears.
Frank, they're already all settled in. And anyway, I'm sure they want their privacy.
Well, it's got doors, Diane. And private as can be. Tom?
I don't have a problem with it. I think it's up to Annie.
Well, it'd be great for when my dad comes to visit.
Where is your dad, honey?
He's at home, working.
You know, I don't know. Is it worth it, really? I mean, how long do you think you'll carry on working with Pilgrim?
That depends on Pilgrim.
At the Lazy J, Annie is packing. Grace is on the phone.
I know, me too. When are you coming to visit?
Yeah, well, there'll be plenty of room because we're moving down to the ranch. Yeah, they've got this really cute little house down by the creek. It's really pretty.
Okay. I love you too.
Hold on.
Dad wants to talk to you.
Hi.
Well, she sounds like she's doing it right, how is she?
Yeah.
Annie watches Grace go into the bathroom.
You know, I think she seems to be getting more comfortable on the ranch, which is the only reason I said yes to this move.
Well, that makes sense.
Robert is sitting at his office desk.
So, how are you doing out there in Marlboro Country?
Is the magazine complaining at all?
Yeah, but nothing I can't handle. Lucy says she thinks Gottschalk's plotting, but what else is new?
So when are you coming home?
You know, I asked him that myself tonight, and he doesn't know.
Grace is listening.
I miss you, Annie.
Yeah, I know. We miss you, too.
Good night.
Night.
Annie stands, and Grace comes back in.
Did you ask him to come visit?
Annie turns to meet Grace's challenging gaze.
You already did. Do you want me to help you pack?
Grace returns to the bathroom. At the ranch, Frank's wife is vigorously window cleaning. She stops, frowning, to watch Joe helping Grace to unload the Range Rover. It's parked in front of a long wooden chalet set among trees on the other side of the river. Inside the chalet, Annie takes her laptop computer from a box on the floor and puts it on the table. She wipes her hands and walks to the doorway. From her bedroom window, Grace is staring across the river, where Joe and his younger brothers are helping ranch hands position a tall fence post. In dappled sunlight, Tom is controlling the center of the corral while Pilgrim trots around the perimeter. Annie leads the way through the trees to the corral. Grace hobbles slightly awkwardly behind her, using her metal walking stick. A square-faced man with white hair is leaning on the top rail of the corral, holding a coil of rope. Annie steps up onto the bottom rail and leans on the top one next to him. Grace tries to do the same, but her prosthetic foot slips off. Annie watches her trying, then steps down again. Grace walks a few paces, leans on a lower rail, and watches from between that and the top one. Annie's lips tighten. Then she smiles and looks at the man.
Hi.
Howdy.
Tom flicks a long switch to keep Pilgrim moving. He stops using it, and the horse turns in to face him. Tom stands quite still in front of Pilgrim. The horse seems to lick his lips with his long pink tongue. Otherwise, both are motionless, gazing at each other.
What's he doing?
He's trying to get him to hook on.
Annie, frowning slightly in the bright sun, nods as if she understood.
How's it going?
Annie looks up at the man, who just gazes into the corral. Resigned, she does likewise. Tom walks towards Pilgrim and holds out his hand. Pilgrim throws up his head and trots off. Tom throws down the switch and yanks a pair of yellow leather gloves from his belt. Pulling them on, he walks over to the fence, glances into Annie's eyes, and takes the rope from the man. He moves slowly back into the corral, easing out a wide noose in the rope, and looks up at the horse. Pilgrim rears, turns, and trots away again. Tom swings the noose once and strides towards Pilgrim. The horse begins to canter around the corral, with Tom mirroring his movement from the center of the circle, swinging the noose round and round above his head. Grace watches nervously, Annie with raised eyebrows. Finally, Tom flings the noose over Pilgrim's neck. He quickly bends and turns, holding the rope behind his thigh so that when the noose tightens, he takes the strain against his legs. Even so, the horse pulls him, bent almost double, across the corral. Tom keeps the noose firm around Pilgrim's neck and the rope taut. The horse bucks and twists, pulls away from the man, who follows, then heads for him, making Tom retreat. Pilgrim rears up twice, his forelegs high in the air. Annie backs away and Grace turns her back, but looks around again to see Pilgrim beginning to gallop around the corral on his accustomed path, lashing out once with his hind legs, then settling to a steady gallop. Tom gradually increases the pressure on the rope until the horse comes to a halt and the noose slackens. Annie steps back up to the fence. Man and horse look steadily into each other's eyes. The wound on Pilgrim's face looks dry and rough, with new skin growing over the flesh. Still holding the noose end of the rope, Tom drops the rest of the coil. He takes off his gloves and drops them too. Open-mouthed, Grace peers through the fence. Very gently, Tom reaches forward and widens the noose around Pilgrim's neck. Standing very close to the horse, Tom crouches down. Slowly, the horse drops his head, until Tom can delicately lift the noose from his neck and with his other hand tenderly stroke the horse's forehead. Grace's eyes are glued to the scene as Tom unhurriedly stands and steps away from Pilgrim. still looking at the horse, he walks to the fence and carries on round the perimeter. Pilgrim plods slowly behind. Annie looks at Grace, who's still staring. Tom stops and waits for the horse, who comes right up to him and lowers his head for Tom to stroke him again. Tom looks up at the white-haired man, who nods approvingly, and his eyes have a faraway look. On the ridge of a green hill strewn with boulders, Tom sits astride a horse. In the valley, Joe's younger brothers, in red jackets and white Stetsons, throw bales of hay off the back of a flatbed truck, being driven slowly through a herd of brown and black cattle by Joe, who glances back to watch. From the crest of the hill, Tom watches cattle being herded. He puts two fingers into his mouth. Tom takes off his white Stetson, waves it. Down on the plain, with the mountains behind, Frank doffs his brown Stetson and waves back. Tom points left with his hat, and both men move off. Tom, in a blue denim jacket, rides at a gentle trot through the green mountain pasture. At the ranch, Tom and Frank are leading the herd, while other cowboys keep the cattle in a body and drive them on. The herd crosses a low wooden bridge over the river. The cows are either brown or black, mostly with white faces. Some of them are driven into the corral, and one of the cowboys closes the gate. A branding iron is heated in an open fire. In the apparent confusion of the corral, the cowboys, including Frank's wife, lasso the calves, tie their legs, anesthetize them with a large gun operated by squeezing two handles together. And the red-hot branding iron is applied to the calves' flanks. Grace and Annie arrive outside the corral, in time to see Tom lasso a black calf and tie off his rope around his saddle pommel. Annie's wearing a vivid blue shirt and a large white sun hat. Grace is in her dungarees and a pale blue long-sleeved T-shirt. She frowns with disgust as the calves are tied, anesthetized and branded, while cowboys hold them down on the ground. A very businesslike Joe puts the branding irons back in the fire. Tom dismounts, gives the reins of his horse to another cowboy, and heads for Annie.
Hey, you over there!
Annie glances around nervously.
Make yourself useful?
She forces a smile.
Hey!
Yeah?
I think you got a volunteer here. You want to take care of her?
Annie, now hatless, kneels beside a calf and squeezes the tranquilizing gun. She's shoved on her backside, and Joe throws back his head with laughter. She picks herself up and continues. Grace nervously enters the corral.
Where's Grace?
Frank's wife loads the tranquilizer. A red-brown calf is brought down, and Annie sees Tom, his arm around Grace's shoulders, leading her across the corral to the fire. He holds her steady as she brands a calf. Annie watches, smiling. Another calf is roped, bucking and leaping, and Annie grits her teeth, struggling to hold it down. As she stands, she bumps into a passing horse and stumbles into Tom's arms. Tom sets her on her feet again, and she walks away, looking quite disconcerted. A couple of onlookers laugh. Her white sun hat is lying in the corral, dirty and battered. Tom picks it up, knocks a bit of dust off it, and hands it to her. She smiles.
You okay?
Cocktail hour yet?
What?
I said, is it cocktail hour yet?
Joe and his brothers drive the calves out of the corral, raising yet more dust. Tom walks up to Grace.
You handled that pretty well. I think it's time you started earning your keep around here. So when we're not working, you're not doing your therapy, I'd like you to help out with the horses. You know, rubbing them, cleaning the stalls. Think you can handle it?
That's not a question, is it?
Nope.
Okay.
Head on one side, Grace grins happily. On a sunny afternoon, a boy sitting on a swing made from an old tire swoops out over the river and back. A little boy trots to a long row of picnic tables under the trees where the white-haired man is playing the guitar. A boy with a rope looped around him attempts to tug others who are holding him back. Another lad is tossing a horseshoe and others rush about with lassoes. At the tables, men's hats are tucked neatly under their chairs. Frank's wife addresses their twin sons. Annie observes, smiling. Grace listens to a story.
Have all the lug nuts off, but the jack slipped and fell right on that rock he calls a hedge.
Is he okay? My trade,
my father. Well, he rearranged his scalp about 12 inches.
But he always dreamed of having a place where he could raise horses, have a whole separate life. My grandson Joe was named for him. Somebody told him about a place called Stockett. He got on his horse and he rode over there and he got off and he walked as far as he could one way and then he turned around and he walked as far as he could to the other. And then he decided that that's where he was going to settle. And that's where we raised Frank and Tommy.
Tom lifts an eyebrow, looks down, smiling.
Where do you call home?
She's from New York, Mom.
Well, I was born in London, but I'm from all over, really. My father was a diplomat, and so we moved constantly.
That sounds very important.
No, he was a wonderful man. He died when I was 12, but we lived all over the world. It's not the same as knowing a place like this.
Well, sometimes people carry it more on the inside than the outside.
And he nods, glances down, and back up at Tom's pale-skinned, white-haired mother. Inside the ranch, Annie wanders into a room where the evening sun makes only a faint glow. Old black-and-white photos decorate the walls and mantelpiece.
This family has quite a history.
Yeah, it's a story, all right.
Annie looks at a photo of Frank and Tom as boys with their parents.
I love how she calls him Tommy.
Yeah, I always did. I think she always favored him.
She loves telling this story about when he was 2 years old, he ran off. And they found him sleeping in the barn between two giant hooves of a Percheron stallion. He said that horse was protecting him, and nobody could convince him otherwise.
Outside, Tom and Frank are walking their mother to a car, taking an arm each. From the window, Annie watches thoughtfully as the old woman reaches up to hug and kiss each son. The end of the white, two-story ranch facing the river is lit by the evening sun. A hill looms behind and to the left of it. Sitting on the bank, Joe, with Grace beside him, lobs a stone into the water. Annie, in blue shirt and jeans, wanders out of the house.
Why do you always wear that hat? Because it fits my head. Want to try it on?
Annie looks up and strolls around the corner to the veranda.
Wait, what do you call that? Okay, one more time.
Tom is playing a game with the twins, using a leather bootlace looped around his hand and the finger of one of the boys. Annie sits, smiling.
Okay. Loose knotted, right? Looks like the only way to get it off is to break the touch, right? Now watch. You watch him? Watch carefully.
He flicks a finger and the lace flies loose.
Again, one more time.
Oh, no. I don't fall for that one, boys. Now you guys get on in for your
He smiles at Annie and rolls up the lace. She hugs herself as if cold.
Here. Oh.
He stands, holding his blue denim jacket and slips it around her shoulders. She smiles and mouths her thanks. Her legs are crossed, and one foot waggles up and down ceaselessly. Tom, sitting back on the settee, notices and smiles.
What?
Do you ever sit still for just a minute?
Well, you sit still too long in New York and you get renovated. Why is it, Mr. Booker, that sometimes I get the feeling that you're laughing at me?
I don't know why.
No. You're supposed to say you're not laughing at me.
Oh, I see. You take care of both sides of the conversation, do you?
It's a man's world, Mr. Booker. Most women have to.
You can call me Tom. Maybe I am laughing a little bit. I figure since you're here, it might be nice to relax into the place a bit.
Annie grimaces.
Well, it's beautiful country. And I could see having some kind of a vacation place, a retreat, but I don't know how you do it full time. Don't you miss the rest of the world?
What's there to miss?
Well, if you've never lived in a city with museums and theatre and restaurants and music, well, I can't explain.
Well, does Chicago count?
You lived in Chicago?
Where I met my wife.
You were married to a woman in Chicago?
Yeah, really. A woman.
No, I'm sorry. I didn't. No, I'm sorry.
I was studying engineering, and she was studying music, the cello. And I once heard her play a Dvorak concerto, and I thought it was the most beautiful piece of music I'd ever heard in my life.
Hmm.
So, just who's laughing at who here?
Annie smiles wryly, and Tom grins, showing a row of even white teeth. Night. Upstairs lights shine from the ranch. Across the river in the old creek house, Annie is in bed, lying on her side reading a paperback novel. The cover shows an elegant woman in a picture hat and a white fur stole. Annie puts down her book, takes off her glasses and switches off the light. A horseman is silhouetted against the grey dawn sky, riding along the ridge of a hill. Blue sky and clouds are reflected in the still waters of a stream as he rides beside it. Annie is jogging along a narrow dirt path towards the rider, who turns his grey horse towards her. She slows to a walk, hands on hips, and smiles. Tom touches his hat.
Jogger, huh?
I don't jog, Mr. Booker, I run.
Well, that's lucky for you. Grizzlies around here mostly go for joggers. Sleeping okay in that house?
Well, I don't sleep well anywhere, but the house is fine.
Tom, in a denim shirt buttoned to the throat, carefully rides through the stream, and Annie walks along the path to meet him. A clump of tall trees in full leaf stands behind
him. Have a way with animals.
That's all right. He's just young. Here, hold out your hand just a little lower. That's it. So he can get the smell of it.
She holds her hand out, and the horse lowers his head to it. After a moment, she strokes his face.
He's beautiful.
Now, how come you don't ride anymore?
Hmm?
Grace told me he used to ride when she was younger.
She did?
Yeah.
I don't know. No time, I guess.
Tom gazes steadily at Annie, who looks around uncomfortably.
I thought it was supposed to be spring.
Enjoy the day.
You too.
Tom's horse heads down the path Annie came along, and she continues walking the way she was going. She turns back to look at him, and then breaks into a run, her grey T-shirt flapping under her dark top. In the stable, Grace is filling a green bucket from a hose. She backs away to peer through the slats of a stall, and Pilgrim turns his head towards her. Water from the hose trickles onto the floor. At the door, Tom pauses, watching her. He walks on into the stable, carrying his saddle and saddle blanket. Grace shuffles back to the bucket, and Tom puts down his gear, still looking through the shadows of the stable towards her. While she fills a second bucket, he unbuckles his leather chaps, which protect the legs of his jeans, throws them down, and she looks up at him.
Take a ride with me.
Grace backs away again and turns off the tap. She limps through the door using her stick, and Tom joins her. Their dark figures are silhouetted against the bright green of the hill rising up from the ranch. Outside, they head for a red pickup.
Can you drive?
Drive? Not old enough.
Well, it's never too soon to start. Get in.
He gives her the keys, and she stares at him.
I can't.
Come on, I don't have all day.
Grace looks nervously in both directions while Tom walks around the truck, climbs in, and opens the driver's door. Grace frowns, then passes Tom her stick, and by hanging onto the steering wheel, hauls herself up into the cab. He watches her, his elbow resting on the open window. She leans over and closes her door.
Put the key in and turn it on.
This one?
Mm-hmm. Now, right pedal's the gas. The other one's the brake.
I don't think I can with my leg.
Well, there's only one way to find out. Now, put it in D.
She grasps a lever on the steering column and moves it down a notch.
Now give us a guess.
Grace sets her prosthetic foot on the pedal, then presses hard.
Okay, we know you can't. You just got to feel how much. Now give it. Try it again. There you go.
The pickup rolls smoothly along the dirt track, Grace concentrating fiercely.
Nice. Real nice. Now there's a little road up at the end here. Turn on dead.
The pickup swerves right, then left, a little too far, then heads down the left fork.
Now just follow this. Listen to it. I'm going to kind of close my eyes here for a little while, so keep going till you run out of road.
Grace flashes him a look of horror.
I don't think I can.
Well, the question if you can. You are.
Grace stares through the windscreen, then glances disbelievingly at Tom. His hat is tipped down over his eyes, but he sneaks a look at her, and another straight ahead. The pickup plugs on through the lush green pasture, heading up to the hills. The truck is parked on a flat plain.
Where'd you get Pilgrim from?
We bought him in Kentucky. Me and my mom took a trip down there to see him.
Well, that must have been special.
Yeah.
They're sitting on the back of the pickup, Tom gazing out, Grace facing him with her right leg drawn up.
Are you afraid of anything? Tom Booker.
You're growing old. Not being much use.
Tom looks down with a slight smile.
Hey, Grace.
Mm.
What went on out there with Pilgrim?
Grace looks up at him quickly, then swings a leg off the pickup and turns to face the same way as Tom across the plain.
See, Grace, I got a problem. When I work with a horse, I like to know its history. Now, most of the times, a horse in its own way can pretty much tell you the whole story, but sometimes they get so messed up in their heads that you need more to go on. Now, I don't know how you feel about talking about it, and if you don't feel like it, I understand. But if I'm going to figure out what's going on in his head, it sure would help me if I understood exactly what happened that day. You know, not today. Whatever you feel like it. I'll leave that up to you.
Tom is riding a palomino, a pale red horse with white mane and tail, and leading a dark brown one. They're heading for the creek house where Annie is sitting on the step reading. She looks up.
I'm not wrong.
She straightens up and takes off her glasses. Tom stops and smiles down at her.
The answer's no.
I haven't even heard the question yet. Now, the truth is, you'd be doing me a real favor. I got all these young colts that need riding. Rimrock here, he's feeling kind of left out.
Poor thing.
He'd be grateful. He'd take real good care with you.
Is this how you're going to make me pay my phone bill?
No, ma'am. That part's extra.
She smiles wryly, turns and picks up a pile of newspapers from the wooden step.
Oh? Watch your hat.
Oh, I have a hat.
I know, I've seen it.
Tom is still leaning forward, holding out a yellow cowboy hat. And he stops smiling and continues into the house.
I think my stirrups are too long.
No, they're fine. Just relax your center.
Yeah.
Just sitting in a bucket.
Well, it's all coming back, you know. I mean, I'll be fine.
Okay, well, then I'll stop talking then.
No, I didn't mean that. I've never ridden Western before. Oh.
Yeah, but he doesn't know that. Just sit the horse.
Yeah.
You have a nice seat. You're doing fine.
Thank you.
They're riding through rich green pasture in sunshine, although dark clouds cover the mountains ahead of them. The horses splash across a shallow, swift-flowing river with tall, dark conifers along the bank behind them and come out into more pasture. Annie is wearing the hat Tom gave her.
You look good. You feel okay?
Yeah.
Want to pick it up a little?
Yeah.
They start to canter, first on the grassland, then through a vast, cut hayfield.
Watch your reins. Give him some room. Let him do the work.
Tom looks over at Annie, who's relaxed, head back, with a wide smile. Her short, straight red hair, which flows back from her forehead, just lifts and falls as she canters. They pass huge cylinders of hay and ride on through a stand of tall, slender, silver birch trees. Still at the canter, they head back, side by side, through the long grass towards the ranch. To their left, the green of the hills is mixed with yellow tones.
Okay, you okay?
Yep.
Let's go.
They both lean forward in the saddle, and the horses break into a gallop. As they pick up speed, the riders sit back, Annie grinning excitedly. The ground streaks by beneath them, grass studded with rocks and sprinkled with white daisy-like flowers. Annie and Tom ride along a ridge. A soft pastel pink tints the pale grey sky. In the warm evening sun, they canter up a hill, slowing to a walk as they reach the top, a cliff edge, looking out over the plain to the mountains beyond. Dark, velvety grey clouds cover the sky, making the pasture below a deep emerald green. Close to the edge, they halt and dismount, swinging their right legs over the horse's back simultaneously. They throw the reins over their saddles, and Annie walks almost to the brink, taking off her hat and planting her hands on her hips. She glances back as Tom ambles to the edge a few feet from her. They both gaze at the view.
I envy your mother.
She moves closer to him and sits.
I do.
He sits beside her.
It must be great. To be her age and to be at that point in life when you have no more guesswork. No more impossible decisions to make. And anyway, it doesn't matter because all the worries and all the wrong turns that you made are as valuable and as cherished as the things that you did right. It must be such a relief. There must be such peace in that.
I don't think you have to wait to be her age to find that kind of peace.
Yeah, but how would you know? Unless it was all behind you. Do you have it?
Sometimes. Not all the time, but sometimes.
When?
Waking up on the ranch in the morning, knowing what I'm supposed to do that day. Knowing I'm home.
I wake up every morning and I don't know damn things. Was I right to bring her here, away from what's familiar, away from her father, her friends? And the more I try and fix things, the more everything falls apart.
You should let him fall.
No, I can't.
Why?
Annie looks down, then at Tom. She can't hold his steady gaze, and looks down again.
Do you think I was right to come?
I can't answer that, Annie.
Well, I'll know soon enough. If I've made a mistake, Grace will let me know.
She's a strong kid. She gets that from somebody.
Annie nods, and Tom grins to himself. He throws a stone far out over the edge.
Thank you for all you're doing. You and your family, letting us stay at the house.
It wasn't getting much use.
What was your wife like?
She had reddish hair. Not quite, almost. Depending on the light. She had green eyes. And when she played, that was it. Something just went right through me. I'd never heard music like that played before. And the way she looked when she played it. And then one day she looked at me that way. That was it. For both of us. I knew she didn't want to be a rancher's wife, but I wanted to give it a try. I thought maybe she could give music lessons to the kids in town at school, maybe. And that our kids would grow up with my brother's kids and play together. But she wasn't happy here. Too much space, she said.
So why didn't you stay in Chicago?
What enough space? It just wasn't meant to be.
He throws another stone.
But how did you know? For sure.
Knowing is the easy part. Saying it out loud is the hard part.
Seems so obvious now, doesn't it? We weren't right for each other, if only we knew then.
I didn't love her because I was right. I just loved her.
Annie sits very still for a moment, looking at nothing in particular. With a faint smile, she nods slowly. She meets Tom's eyes and looks down. Tom watches her for several seconds before gazing out over the plain again. Above the distant black mountains, patches of glowing gold light flood out through breaks in the grey clouds. Tom rises, puts on his hat, and Annie follows suit. They stroll back to the horses.
For whatever it's worth, Annie, it took a lot of guts for you to come here.
In the dim light, with the peach and gold sky behind them, they stare at each other. Annie turns and mounts.
Look, you're late.
Tom bends and makes an adjustment to the leather girth running under the horse's belly. Annie sits gazing down at him. When he's finished, he grasps Annie's leg above the ankle and replaces her foot in the stirrup. He holds onto her leg and looks up to catch her eyes. He squeezes her leg once and lets go, then unhitches her reins and hands them to her before moving to his own horse. Riders and horses are silhouetted against the faint blue evening sky. In the Creek House kitchen, Grace wipes down the wooden workbench, picks up a yellow plastic beaker, and carries it through to the living room. She looks up. Outside, Annie and Tom ride unhurriedly towards the house. From inside the door, Grace watches Annie dismount and hand the reins wordlessly to Tom. He turns to go, leading her horse as she takes off her hat and strides towards the house. Joe is driving a black car from the corral into a field.
Come on.
He lifts a fence post and hooks it to another with a loop of wire, closing the gap.
Hey, Joe. Hi.
Grace wipes her hand across her mouth.
Would you let me ride your horse?
Joe raises his eyebrows. His eyes swiveled at the tall black horse and back to Grace.
Have you talked to Tom about it?
Of course I have.
Grace takes hold of the horse's bridle.
I don't know. You sure Tom said it's all right?
You gonna give me a hand or what?
You sure? Come on.
Joe holds the stirrup.
Okay.
Easy. Hold it.
Okay.
Grace tries several times to raise her prosthetic foot into the stirrup, finally managing it.
Got it. I can do it.
Joe passes Grace the reins.
Here.
Grace tries to lift herself into the saddle. Grace falls.
Are you okay?
Joe gives Grace a hand up and bends to pick up her stick. Grace, on the verge of tears, spots the twins peeping at her through the slats of a fence. She glares at Joe, turns and limps away. The twins scamper away.
Hey! You better not say anything!
They stick out their tongues. Night. In the Creek House, Grace, in a full-length blue dress, is laying a table for eight. Tom, Frank and his wife are looking at magazines. Joe opens the door. The twins are hidden behind an open copy of Cover. A stubby finger points to the belly button of a girl in a Calvin Klein advert. In the kitchen, Annie grabs a jar of pasta sauce and shakes it. Grace reaches through the door and drops some cutlery on a bench.
I thought there were too many forks, so I just...
Annie beams at Grace.
You look really pretty.
Thanks.
Grace hesitates while Annie carries on cooking, then slips back into the dining room, closing the kitchen door behind her.
Does anybody want something to drink?
Shit!
You better go give your mom a hand.
Oh, yeah?
Tom goes into the kitchen.
Everything under control here?
No, not really. It's been so long since I've done this, I've forgotten. And I couldn't find any Parmesan cheese.
Well, you got an easy crowd out there. As long as it's hot, can I do anything?
Just make yourself comfortable.
I am comfortable.
Well, in that case, you can bring in the pasta.
Tom Button's address.
You, Mr. Button.
Thank you.
They exchange twinkling smiles before Tom carries away a dish of pasta. Looking pleased and surprised, Annie rubs the back of her neck.
Now, I have another round of that spaghetti, if I may.
Oh, of course.
Thank you.
I like the sauce. Maybe I could get the recipe. It's from a jar.
Oh. Annie puts her hands to her mouth. Tom looks from mother to daughter.
Well, now. You know, I used jar sauce once. I don't believe it was near as good as this. Isn't that right, Frank?
No.
No. You know, I think you've got to know which brand to pick. I sure would like the name of this one.
Annie and Tom both smile at her.
Mm-hmm. Annie, you've given me a rare night off.
Ooh, you're touching on a sore subject here. Anne's got these big dreams in her head about getting away to, gosh, what was it? Greece, Morocco?
Morocco.
One of these places where women wear masks and everybody's running around in robes. And...
Well, we could use a vacation.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to Branson for the wedding.
Oh, just had it.
You don't know how to play the game.
Hey.
Yes, I do.
You do not.
Uh-huh. Oh, Frank, you know, Branson, Missouri is not exactly Morocco.
I got family there. Got no family in Morocco, as far as I know.
What's up?
Boys, settle down.
You're just showing up.
Shut up, stupid.
You're the only one who's stupid. Boys. Linda.
Boys.
Don't fall off your horse.
Are you a little turd?
I saw him in the past or her trying to get out of Gonzo. I saw him.
Are you turd?
No!
Did you go riding?
No!
Get up.
Out you go.
Get out.
Right now.
Go
out
home,
the door.
Now.
I didn't start.
Jump.
Right now. Come on. Let's go. Annie, I'm so sorry. They're just tired. We should just get them home to bed. Say goodnight and thank you.
Annie, dinner was delicious.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
It was wonderful.
Say thank you.
Thank you.
Joe, did Grace try to ride?
I expect you should talk to Grace about that, ma'am. If I did anything wrong, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. Don't let her turn you away.
Tom leaves. Annie walks slowly to Grace's door, which is shut, puts her hands on it, head bent, hesitates, and turns away. She sits, puts her hands to her face, and for a moment she slumps forward. She shakes her head, looks up at Grace's door, and stands up.
Grace
is sitting on her bed, her back to Annie.
Is everything all right?
Grace, in pale blue pajamas, has a notebook on her lap. Annie steps into the room.
Did you try writing again?
Yeah. Does that ma'am cured?
Nobody's trying to cure you. Look, I just want to say I think it's great that you're writing again.
Annie sits on the bed and Grace moves away from her.
And I think I know why you needed to do
it. Yeah, you know everything.
Stop it. Why won't you let me talk to you? Why are you so angry with me? Whatever I do, it's wrong. Whatever I say, it's wrong.
Yeah, well, now you know how it feels.
Look, I know that I'm hard on you sometimes.
Right.
I'm sorry if that makes you feel this way. But if I push you, it's only because I'm...
Because if I'm your perfect daughter, that makes you the perfect mother, right?
I don't deserve that. I don't push for me. I push for you so that you don't spend half your life not knowing where you belong.
Yeah, well, you've done a great job.
Yeah. Annie nods and heads for the door. Grace buries her face in her hands.
Who's ever gonna want me like this?
Grace turns her crumpled, wet face to her mother, who rushes back and hugs her.
Who's ever gonna want me like this? Nobody will.
Still hugging Grace tight, Annie turns away for a second.
I know it sometimes doesn't seem this way, but I do understand what you're feeling. When I was your age, and when my dad died,
I felt like I'd lost everything and I'd be all alone. And I've got you. I used to pray every night that you and Dad would have another kid, so I wouldn't have to be so special.
And his face creases in pain.
I know. And I know how hard it must be to have lost your best friend and have your party been different from how you'd like it to be. But one day, somebody will look at this extraordinary woman that you're becoming. All they'll see is how much they love you.
They pull apart, still holding on, and look into each other's eyes.
It's all I see.
Grace looks at Annie for a second, then flings herself back into her arms, clinging tightly. Gently, mother and daughter rock to and fro. One of Pilgrim's dark brown eyes gazes across at Tom, who's sitting on a saddle with his back to the horse on the far side of the corral. Tom's wearing a fawn shirt, leather chaps, and a white Stetson. He sits quietly, knotting a length of rope. The horse ambles from the dappled, shady section of the corral across to Tom, sitting in a patch of sunshine. Pilgrim stops behind the man, who glances up at Grace, leaning on the outside of the corral fence, looking on. Tom carefully slides the knotted rope, now fashioned into a halter, behind his back, where Pilgrim is snuffing curiously. Two ends of the rope, joined side by side with a brass clip, are still in Tom's hands. And while Pilgrim continues to investigate, he pulls them through a loop and tightens them. The big horse nudges Tom's shoulder and nuzzles his back. Tom stretches his arm behind him and scratches the horse under the chin. Grace watches. In the Creek House, Annie strides to the front door. She pauses for a moment on the front step, then turns and goes back inside.
Yep.
Hello, this is AT&T Conference Service. Is this Annie McLean?
Yes.
I have a conference call scheduled for you with Mr. Gottschalk and Mr. Felton.
Mr. Felton. Hold on, please.
Annie sits at a desk, her hand over the mouthpiece, and takes a deep breath.
Okay, I'm ready.
In the stable, Grace empties a green bucket. She looks up as if making a decision, takes a handful of grain, rolling it in her hand, and goes to Pilgrim's stall. He's standing quietly, facing her. She unlatches the door, slides it back, and stares at him for a few seconds. She hangs a stick on a loop of rope by the door, glances down at the grain, drops it, and dusts off her hand. She and Pilgrim gaze at each other. As she steadies herself against the doorframe, Pilgrim moves restlessly. Grace steps apprehensively into the stall, never taking her eyes from Pilgrim's. She takes a deep breath and moves forward again. Pilgrim backs into a corner, stamping. Grace, too, retreats, her blue eyes still holding his brown ones. Then she turns to go. Night. Tom walks through the yard and notices Grace sheltering in a doorway, holding her white anorak tight to her throat. He takes a step to her and stops.
I've been waiting for you to come back.
Are you hungry?
In the ranch kitchen, Tom is chivvying scrambled eggs with a wooden spatula. Grace is sitting at the white top table.
Judith was telling me about this boy. I never even got his name.
Tom puts down the spatula and switches off the cooker.
We were going to go around the railroad bridge. We were laughing about something. I don't know what. And
horse fell, and Judith's foot was caught in the stirrup.
She sees Judith and horse tumble into the snow.
And she was so scared.
Judith's frightened face slithers helplessly down the slope.
And I saw this truck coming around the turn.
Tom is standing just behind Grace.
And it was honking, trying to get us to move. And I tried to grab her reins and to get her horse to move out of the way. And the truck started to skid. And there was no time to do anything. It ran right into Judith. And she just disappeared.
Tears flow down Grace's cheeks and drip off her nose.
And then it came at Pilgrim and me. Pilgrim rode up at the truck. And I fell off. But Judith... Oh, God, Judith. I'm so sorry, Judith.
Grace sees Judith falling, calling out as she does. Tom sits at the end of the table, puts out his arms, and Grace snuggles up to him, her head on his shoulder.
Now, I'm not going to tell you it's going to stop feeling this bad. But I will tell you, you didn't do anything wrong. Same thing could have happened to me, or to Frank, or to Joey. And it doesn't make any sense to try to figure out why these things happen. There was a boy from the Blackfeet Reservation. Used to do some work around here for a while. 16, strong kid, good kid. He and I are really, really good friends. One day he went swimming and dove headfirst into the lake and right into a rock. And it snapped his neck, paralyzed him. And after the accident, I'd look in on him from time to time. But he wasn't there. It's like his mind, his spirit, whatever you want to call it, just disappeared. The only thing left was just anger. It's sort of if the boy I once knew just went somewhere else.
I know where he goes.
Tom sits her up and looks into her eyes.
I know you do. Don't you disappear. You do whatever you have to do to hold on. I'll tell you one more thing. You know when Pilgrim reared up against that truck? You know what I think? I think that damn horse loved you so much, he was trying to protect you. That's what I think.
Grace throws her arms around Tom's neck, and they hold each other tight. Tom rides over the hilly grassland, speckled with white and purple wildflowers, leading a riderless horse by the reins. The riderless horse holds back for a moment and Tom pulls him along. In a sunny hayfield, fresh green grass is springing up on the remnants of yellow straw. Tom, on a dark bay horse, rides in circles, encouraging the chestnut Pilgrim to follow on the inside of the circle. As Pilgrim stays closer to him, he makes the circles tighter to the right, then to the left, so the two horses almost touch as they turn. In the hayfield, with the cylinders of hay still scattered about and a background of trees, the bay gallops to the left while Pilgrim takes a much wider course. He turns to join the bay, and Tom leans across and lays a restraining hand on him so that he stays close. They continue at the trot. Pilgrim gallops through the field, kicking his hind legs and following Tom at a few yards' distance. On a sunny day, a herd of cattle is on the move. Annie in blue denim shirt and jeans, and the hat Tom gave her, Tom himself, Joe and Frank and the other hands, all help to keep the herd together. Diane, with the twins beside her, follows in the red pickup. A black and white dog, red tongue lolling, lopes along, and Tom gallops up to Annie, who grins at him and laughs. He mouths, "All right," at her. Riding together, Tom and Annie follow the herd, Tom waving his hand, explaining something to her. Other riders appear. The cattle plod through tall grass. Under grey clouds, the trees sway gently in the wind. Astride a log by the river, Joe is showing Annie the boucle's trick. Diane watches unsmiling as Tom takes over. Tom, grinning happily, starts to loop the lace around his and Annie's fingers. Diane finishes tying a rope on a tent and turns away, while Annie and Tom press the tips of their fingers together. Tom flicks the lace free. Their eyes meet. Tom pulls his finger away, and Annie moves hers forward for a moment, keeping contact before dropping her hand.
Want to see it again?
Yep.
He loops up the lace.
Can you do it without smiling?
Yep.
No, you can't. Not possible. I can feel the muscles. I can feel the muscles right here.
The sun gleams silver on the shallow river. Diane, in a red check shirt, is sitting on the bank washing dishes. Annie, carrying a big stew pot and some cutlery, joins her and leans forward to swish water into the pot.
Must be nice to have a few days off work, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. It's more than a few days, though. I'm not an editor anymore.
Someone said it out loud. They fired you?
No, it's more like a... Yeah. They fired me.
You don't seem too upset about it.
It was a delayed shock. Or maybe not. I'm sure I can talk my way back in there or get another magazine someplace, but maybe I'm not sure I want to.
Yeah. I guess you don't have to figure it out till you get home.
Annie glances up at Diane and looks away thoughtfully. Behind them, Tom talks to Joe.
Did you always know this is the life you wanted?
Well, I was a rancher's daughter. I guess it's not too far to go to becoming a rancher's wife. Yeah.
Frank's a good man.
Oh, they don't come better. I don't deny there are times I think about all the things I won't have. Maybe I get to see Morocco. Probably not.
Diane grins wryly at Annie and returns to the dishes. Annie gazes hard at her.
Did Tom have many girlfriends after his divorce?
Diane's smile disappears and she looks straight at Annie.
Hey, look, Annie, I'm not good at this sort of talk. Goes round and round something and never gets to it, so let's just say what it is. Tom means so much to this family. Don't you go looking here for whatever it is you're looking for. Don't make that man go through something it took him so long to see his way clear of in the first place.
I don't think Tom would do anything he didn't want to do.
He's a good man. Oh, he's got a gift. Comes from heaven above, I swear. But he's still just a man.
Night. Everybody's sitting around a blazing campfire. The white-haired cowboy plays guitar.
The muddy road is brown and still, as far as you can see, honey child, the noontime.
Flame licks the orange-red embers of the log fire, and around it people lie still in their sleeping bags. Annie's eyes are open, and she's gazing into the flames. She lifts her eyes to the other side of the fire, and in the flickering light sees the white sheet of an empty sleeping bag with the top thrown back. From behind, Annie's dark figure is outlined by the moon's faint light as she walks slowly towards the river. She stops. Ahead of her, Tom is hunkered down on the bank. He flicks something into the water, looks round, sees her, and rises. They stand face to face. quite still, they gaze for a moment into each other's eyes. Tom steps forward a pace or two until he's very close to Annie. Their faces are in profile, almost in darkness against the moonlight. Tom leans into her. Annie lifts her face and their lips touch. Lightly, delicately, two or three times, before they kiss passionately. The moonlight gleams on Tom's hair, on Annie's lips. For a few seconds they draw apart, eyes locked, the moonlight glinting on the river behind like a mist. Lips parted, they come together again. They stop kissing and cling together, cheek to cheek, Tom's hand on the back of Annie's neck.
There's something I need to know.
They separate, faces a few inches apart.
Are you sure?
She closes her eyes and kisses him urgently, their hands grasping as if to pull each other even closer.
Gotta get back.
They take a final look, and Tom nods. Annie walks away, the mist of her breath hanging behind her. Tom, standing motionless by the water, watches her go. The Booker herd moves at a leisurely pace through lush mountain pasture. Annie and Tom are riding together, talking. Later, riding behind Frank and Joe, Annie hands Tom his white Stetson. He puts it on, grins at her, and she laughs. The red pickup bumps across the grass. In the passenger seat, Grace's eyes open wide. There's a car in the ranch yard with a man beside it. She leans out of the window.
Dad?
Robert turns and looks up the hill. Tom reins in his horse. Annie glances at him.
Dad!
Robert grins, squinting into the sun. Annie takes a deep breath. In the yard.
It's a pleasure. Welcome.
Oh, yeah?
Hello, Frank.
Oh, sorry.
Oldest boy, Joe.
Hi, Joe.
And this is Mr. Booker.
Tom. Hi, Tom. It's a pleasure. And I want to thank you for the way you took in my girls here. I can already see a difference, and I'm very grateful to you.
Dad? Dad, did you notice? No cane.
I know. It's amazing.
Can we show him Pilgrim, Tom?
You bet.
Let's go get your bags.
Need a hand, Annie?
Yep.
See you later.
Night. Moths cluster on the porch light.
So at this point, I'm pretty sure I'm lost. So I stop by this general store and ask if anyone knows the Booker Ranch, and this nice older gentleman with a bandage on his head gave me directions.
Sweet Jesus. That's Henry Van Oker. Oh. I'm surprised you didn't wind up in Mexico.
Well, once when Dad was in India, he got lost way, way up in these mountains. When he finally found his way back, everyone said that he had discovered a new route, and they redid all the maps.
Well, now how'd you end up in India, Robert?
Oh, this was right after college. I was in the Peace Corps.
Well, that's where he met Mom. Hey, tell him about when Mom went looking for Two Bob.
No, I
haven't. Oh, Dad, come on, Dad. Well, Mom was a writer, and Dad knows the rest. Come on.
She was a journalist for an English periodical. What was it called?
Cambridge Monthly.
Right, and she decided to go to India all by herself without knowing a soul. She had no place to stay, but she was told to look up Two Bob.
Two Bob?
She comes to my door, suitcase and typewriter, and asks where Two Bob is. And I said, right here. And she said, you're Two Bob? I said, no, my name is Robert. Two Bob means white man, and yes, I am.
Robert turns to Annie, who smiles dutifully. Tom looks down into his coffee mug.
And that was how we met.
In the Creek house, Annie clears away makeup from her dressing table. In the mirror, she can see Robert sitting on Grace's bed, looking down at her, fast asleep. Annie looks again. Robert is on his way through the door. Seen in the mirror, Annie shakes her head and mouths something indistinct. Robert stands behind Annie, puts his arm across her chest, and kisses the back of her neck. She presses her hand on his forearm in acknowledgement. He kisses her again, and she continues to rearrange her makeup. He removes his arm, squeezes her shoulders, and walks away, thrusting both hands in his jeans pockets.
Small bed, maybe I should sleep in the barn.
You're allergic to hay.
I apologize for the surprise, but the day's only open yesterday.
You don't have to apologize.
You have every right to be here.
Robert lowers himself onto the edge of the bed as Annie returns to the dressing table.
You are right to bring her here.
Annie turns to him with a smile, which disappears.
Well, there have been plenty of times I wasn't so sure.
They exchange guarded smiles.
Must be tired, huh?
In his room, Tom starts to slip a record from its sleeve, pauses, and pushes it back in. He switches off his record player and shuts the lid. He crosses the room, sits in a rocking chair, and clasps his hands in front of him, his knuckles to his lips. In the Creek house, Annie closes the bedroom curtains and the light goes out. In his room, Tom sits motionless. In the bright, sunny morning, three figures stand on a rise above the ranch. Annie is leaning, unsmiling, against the pickup, watching Tom vault a fence. Robert opens a gate, walks through, and Tom returns to shut it after him. Annie scowls. In the stable.
I can't believe it's the same horse.
We still have a ways to go.
So, how much longer do you think?
Like I told your wife, it's really up to Pilgrim.
Uh-huh.
In the dusk, two couples stroll through a green meadow, past a dry stone wall, towards a long, brightly lit barn. Outside, some children are playing. Inside the barn, two women play guitar. Among the couples dancing are Tom and Grace, until the white-haired cowboy whisks her away, leaving Tom laughing. He quickly finds another partner, a girl with long, dark hair. Robert drinks beer with a couple of older men, and Annie whirls round the floor with Frank. People of all ages, the men mostly in cowboy hats, chatter, drink, and dance. Joe cuts in on the white-haired man and starts dancing with Grace. Someone else cuts in on Frank, and Tom glances over at Annie, now dancing with a tall man with a full dark beard. As Robert refuses to dance with Grace, Tom and Annie gaze across the floor at one another.
Daylight has found me here again.
Tom takes two paces towards Annie.
You can ask me anything, but where have you been?
Annie moves forward into Tom's arms, and they begin to dance, slowly.
You should know the reason why I call. I was looking for a soft place to fall.
Robert is laughing with the two men.
Looking for a soft place. Nothing more than a small taste of the love.
Still dancing, Tom's hand strokes Annie's back through her white shirt. He caresses Annie's hand and places it on his chest, covering it with his own. They move gradually closer, their bodies pressed together, dancing cheek to cheek. Annie clings to him, her eyes closed, and her leg slides between his.
Looking out your window at dawn. Thank you.
Annie gradually slips out of Tom's arms, her lips almost brushing his cheek as she does. Tom gives her a brief, flickering smile, and she holds his look. Robert sees them, at arm's length, their hands just slipping apart as Annie turns away. Annie sits at one side of the barn, Tom at the other, their eyes riveted on one another. Dancers take the floor, obscuring their view. When a gap opens, Tom's seat is empty. Annie's eyes widen. She stares round the barn. Outside, the lights on a pickup are switched on, and it drives away. Morning. Golden sunlight bursts over a hilltop. Robert's talking to Smokey, a ranch hand, watched by Grace. Annie sneaks a look at Tom, closing the corral gate.
The summer is really great.
Hey, Tom, after I doctor those cows, you want me to put them in the upper or lower pasture?
Upper. Okay. That's very short. You grew up here? This is where you're from?
I wasn't born here, but I was in the track. The winter is real. I asked Annie, of course, if you didn't know.
What do you do?
Well, of course, that's the time you got to feed cattle. I hope the majority of them survived the summer here.
Annie, who's watched Tom head for the stable, follows him inside.
Is this how it's going to be now? You don't speak to me, we don't speak to each other? Well, I'm speaking to you now, so say something.
No.
Why?
I can't get in the middle of this.
Well, I'm afraid you are in the middle of this.
He's a good man, Annie.
I never said he wasn't. Don't change the way I feel.
You got to figure out what you want.
Do you know what you want?
I do know what I want, and I'm trying real hard not to get lost in this. I never expected to feel this way again. Annie, this is where I belong. This is who I am. Is this what you want?
Annie looks him straight in the eye.
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Can you tell that to your family? To Robert? To Grace? If you had a chance to go home and change things, would you?
You can't ask me that. It's not that simple.
It is.
He watches her, head on one side, and his eyes drift away from him.
It's not fair.
No, it's not fair.
Night. Tom, hatless in white shirt, slides open Pilgrim's stall door and walks up to the horse. He runs his hand over Pilgrim's face. The scar is smaller now, not so deep. Tom stands by the horse's head, one hand under his chin, one on his neck.
There's something you gotta do tomorrow, boy.
Morning. A saddle blanket is thrown over Pilgrim's back. He lifts his head. He's wearing a cord bridle. Grace is standing just inside the corral fence. Annie, Robert, Joe and Smokey outside. The saddle is lifted off the ground. Pilgrim's ear twitches and he glances round. Annie and Robert gaze across the corral as the saddle is flipped over Pilgrim's back. Smokey watches, still and concentrated, as the stirrup is buckled to the saddle. Diane is outside the corral too, in a white Stetson next to Frank, his arms folded on the fence, his chin resting on them. Another strap is buckled to the saddle. Tom lifts the stirrups off the saddle, letting them fall gently at the horse's side, and hooks the reins over the pommel at the front of the saddle. Joe is sitting on the fence in a blue and grey striped T-shirt. He glances sideways at Grace, nervously twiddling her fingers as Tom walks over to her. He looks at her appraisingly, takes the last step to her, and puts an arm around her shoulders. She grins up at him. They walk slowly towards Pilgrim, stopping a few paces away. The horse looks round at them. Tom goes to him and unhooks the reins from the pommel. Grace looks quite small and rather nervous standing alone. Annie watches her with concern. Tom begins to lead Pilgrim to Grace, who smiles. The horse bucks. His eye sees a blurred and distorted image of Grace. Grace gasps, and Tom pats and strokes the horse's neck and leads him away.
You'll be okay, Grace. Just hang on there a minute or two. Tom will get him all right.
Grace looks back at Frank and round to her parents, who smile and nod reassuringly. She takes a deep breath. Tom continues to walk Pilgrim, then turns him towards Grace. She braces herself and swallows. Looking at Grace with the same left eye, Pilgrim rears up, front legs pawing the air. Grace gasps, and his hand goes to her mouth. Tom, still holding the reins, looks round at Smokey, who's already halfway over the fence. With his hand on Pilgrim's neck, Tom settles the horse. Smokey holds the reins, and Tom drops a loop of rope behind Pilgrim's left front hoof. When the horse steps into it, Tom pulls the link tight, hitches it round the pommel, and hauls on it until Pilgrim's front left hoof lifts off the ground, bending at the knee.
What are you doing?
I have to do something different, Grace.
It's not gonna hurt him, right?
Nothing we've done has hurt him. Grace, this is Pilgrim's chance. And it's yours, too.
Okay.
At a look from Tom, Smokey puts his arm around Grace's shoulders. Smokey leads her to Annie and Robert. Tom slaps the rope against his leg and on Pilgrim's rump, and the horse hobbles three-legged round the corral. Tom keeps Pilgrim moving. Grace, looking distressed, turns to Annie, who pushes through the gate and puts her arm round her. Pilgrim lurches around the corral, bucking in protest. His legs splay and slide, kicking up small showers of dirt as he struggles to keep his balance. Finally, he stops.
That's enough! Stop!
Tom pulls down on the rope tied to Pilgrim's bridle, bracing it across his thigh. He gradually forces the horse down onto one knee. Grace throws herself into her mother's embrace. Pilgrim, making a desperate effort, pulls himself upright and staggers off again around the corral. Still holding the rope, Tom follows the horse as it lunges and heaves around the corral. Robert walks away from the fence, glances back and carries on, head bowed, towards the trees. Again, Pilgrim stops. Again, Tom bears down on the rope. Grace twists round in her mother's embrace, and Robert looks back. Horse and man lock eyes. Tom strains on the rope, and Pilgrim drops on his hobbled foreleg, stretching the other foreleg out. And his hind legs scrabble for perches as he loses his balance and slowly sinks to the ground, rolling over onto his left side. Grace watches tearfully. Tom strokes Pilgrim's neck, kneeling beside the horse, using both hands, rubbing shoulder and face. Pilgrim's nostril flares, his scar quite healed, but looking dark and uneven. Tom strokes Pilgrim's face again, running his hand softly over the horse's right eye. Tom looks round.
Grace, this is where you come in. Come on.
Annie gently pushes Grace across the corral. Robert moves back to the fence, tense and frowning. Tom is sitting on Pilgrim's side. He looks up at Grace.
Okay, I want you to get down here, Grace.
Tom unhitches the rope, which hobbles Pilgrim, and puts a hand on Grace's shoulder.
Grace, I want you to come over here and sit next to me.
But why would he let me...
Grace, look at him. Look at him. He's okay. And you never did anything to let him down.
Oh.
Grace, listen to me.
Oh, I can't.
Grace, you've got to do this. Trust me, just one more time.
Grace looks down at Tom's firm gaze. She gives him a tiny nod.
Do what?
I want you to come over here and sit next to me. Start right here where the neck is and the head, and I want you to stroke him. I want you to rub him and feel him all over.
Grace sits and begins to stroke Pilgrim's neck.
That's it. That's it.
That's it, Bonnie.
As Grace leans over the horse, a tear trickles from her eye. A small hand runs down Pilgrim's long, muscled neck, from his heavy jaw to his shoulder. Pilgrim lies still, blinking in the sunlight, which makes his red coat gleam, and Grace's fair hair, pulled back off her face and tied at the back, look almost blonde. Tom leans across the horse and slips the noose off his foreleg. Grace concentrates on stroking Pilgrim, gazing down into his face. Grace's forehead creases and more tears dribble down her cheeks. Tom watches, almost smiling, and Annie, her lips slightly parted, stares from the far side of the ring. Tom crouches beside Grace.
Grace. Now we're going to show Pilgrim here how to help you get on him. Because you see, there's a point where neither of you is going to need me anymore.
Grace glances down uncertainly.
And we're there. I'm not asking. Put your leg over the saddle here.
Annie frowns and shakes her head. Robert narrows his eyes, watching intently as Tom helps Grace into the saddle and pushes the stirrup over her prosthetic foot. Grace looks nervously into Pilgrim's one visible eye. He blinks and lowers his face to the ground.
Now we're gonna rock him up.
Grace hangs onto the pommel. Tom pulls on the bridle rope. Annie and Robert watch tensely. Tom leans beside Grace, shoulder to shoulder, and they both throw their weight to the right, once, twice. After the fourth shove, Pilgrim suddenly lifts his head and starts to rise. Grace, her mouth open, is heaved into the air. She looks shocked, staring at Pilgrim's neck. The horse stands quite still. Annie puts her hand to her mouth, almost in tears. She looks at Robert, who's watching Grace proudly. Grace suddenly smiles at Tom, lifts the reins, and Pilgrim walks. Tom moves away, still watching, as the horse breaks into a gentle trot. Grace is looking comfortable in the saddle and concentrating only on Pilgrim as they pass Annie, who's still standing just inside the fence. Pilgrim's gait changes again as he begins to canter. Grace's look of fierce concentration relaxes, and she smiles freely as she bobs up and down in the saddle. Annie puts her hands to her cheeks. Robert comes through the gate to her side, takes her hand and holds it. In the dappled light coming through the trees, Grace gallops with ease and confidence, smiling happily. Tom grins at her as she completes another circuit. Smokey nods approvingly, and Joe, sitting beside him, grins too. Frank smiles with quiet satisfaction, leaning on the fence next to Diane. Grace grins at Tom, who takes off his white Stetson and raises it in salute, smiling broadly. He puts his hat back on as Grace halts Pilgrim, throws back her head and lifts her arms into the sky. Then she leans forward and hugs Pilgrim, her face to his neck, her arms around him, stroking the horse, who stands quietly and pricks his ears. Tom comes to Pilgrim's side and puts out his arms. Grace lifts her right leg over the horse, and Tom takes her weight and helps her to the ground. She gives him an ecstatic look, puts her arms around his chest and hugs him. Grace walks into Annie's outstretched arms, and they hug, swaying from side to side. They pull apart, look at each other, and hug again. Annie looks over Grace's shoulder to the other side of the corral at Tom, who's watching with a quiet smile.
Dad.
Honey, you were wonderful.
Annie looks at Tom almost wistfully, hesitates, gives him a half smile, and follows Robert and Grace out of the corral. Tom bends, picks up his rope, and starts coiling it up, alone in the empty space. On a sunny morning in a corral, Smokey hoists a horse's foreleg up, preparing to file its hoof. Annie strides through the gate.
Hey there, getting ready to go home, are you?
Mm-hmm. Is Tom around?
No, he went to Sheridan to get some horses. He left last night.
Annie frowns and looks aside, blinking hard.
When's he coming back?
Well, I don't rightly know. Let me know when you need some help loading Pilgrim, okay?
She turns away. In the Creek house, Annie's packing papers in a box. Robert, bag in hand, checks the bedroom.
What time's your flight?
12:15. Booker's want to leave for the airport by 9:30.
He dumps the bag at the open front door.
Sure you want to drive Pilgrim back?
Well, I already know the way. It's not like I have a job to rush home to. To tell you the truth, I could use the time alone.
Robert turns to the front door and gazes through it.
When are you planning to start?
Oh, I guess I'll leave when you and Grace go.
Robert turns back to look at Annie.
May I make a suggestion?
What?
Take your time.
What's the matter? You look like there's something wrong.
Annie sits, and Robert closes the front door.
Tell you something, Annie. I stood there looking at that horse, and I swear I felt like the same thing was happening to me. And I have two choices. I can either fight the way things are, or accept them.
Robert sits, facing Annie.
See, I always knew I loved you more. Didn't bother me. I guess I felt kind of lucky, a little amazed that a woman like you would want to be with a man like me. I guess I thought if I could do everything right, if I was the best husband, I could be the best father, even being a good lawyer only mattered because of what it meant for us. If I could do all that, it wouldn't make any difference if we loved each other the same or not. I didn't ask for more. I told myself I didn't need any more. But the truth is, you don't know how you feel about me. You don't know if you want a life with me anymore. And the truth is, I don't want you to come home until you do know. One way or the other. Okay.
Anne is looking at Robert, her clear eyes moist. She nods several times very fast and bites her lower lip. Robert gives her a wry smile. Annie manages a little smile in return. She moves forward and slips her arms about Robert's neck and puts her head on his shoulder, holding him very tight. He puts his arms around her, closing his eyes while she cries. Grace is wandering idly through long grass under the trees. Annie lugs a document box out of the Creek house and piles it in on top of other luggage in the back of the Range Rover. Joe hands a bag to Frank, who puts it in the boot of his car.
Thanks, Joe.
Yep.
Frank closes the boot of the big sedan, watched by Robert. Diane walks over to Annie, who wipes her hands on the seat of her jeans.
Bye, Annie. Good luck to you. Thank you. And you too.
They shake hands. Diane nods once, quickly, smiling.
All right, get everybody in. Frank, we all set?
I believe so.
Hopefully he's not here to say goodbye.
Oh, he probably got held up is all.
No, sweetie, the truth is he's not real good at goodbyes.
You know, come think of it, not too good at hellos either.
Frank. You ready?
Grace goes to Annie, who holds her arms out wide, and they hug.
Mm-hmm. Why don't you be home?
In a few days. I'll miss you.
Well, if I get lost, you know where to send the search party.
It'd be just about anywhere.
Annie and Robert kiss on the cheek.
I'll call you again.
Annie stands aside as Robert gets into the back of Frank's car. Grace looks out of the rear window and waves at Annie in her white shirt and blue jeans, who watches unsmiling as the big car sways along the unmade road by the river. She turns away. Annie carries an armful of bedding into the kitchen of the white ranch house and drops it onto a table. She looks around the kitchen, stares through the door into the dining room, and wanders into it. She gazes around the shadowy room, at the red pine open dresser with plates standing on the shelves, at the wall hung with old black and white photos of the Booker family, at another dresser filled with china, at another black and white photo of Tom as a six-year-old, standing by the river in short trousers, at the clock on the mantel, at figures of horses and a mustachioed cowboy. She breathes deeply, turns to the door of the veranda, and walks out into the sunshine. She leans on the rail of the balcony overlooking the river. To her right is the white basket weave settee where Tom first showed her the lace trick. On the other side of the water, nestling under the trees, stands the dark wood shape of the creek house. She gazes at it for some time, the breeze ruffling her red hair, before she turns away. Annie lifts a metal catch and opens the door of the horse trailer. She steps inside and stands in front of Pilgrim, who regards her calmly. She moves close to him, smiles, and strokes his long nose. Annie is squatting beside a bucket, filling it from a hosepipe, her chin cupped in her hand. She stands and turns off the tap. In the doorway behind her, hands on hips, is Tom, in check shirt and white Stetson. Annie puts her hand to her mouth.
He going back inside the trailer or running alongside it?
The top two buttons of Annie's blouse are open and the lacy edge of her bra is just visible. She's not quite looking at Tom, her fingers to her mouth. He takes off his hat and moves inside.
I just wanted to be here when you left.
Annie rushes to him and throws her arms around his neck.
I don't want to leave you.
I don't want you to.
Just a few more days.
Tom's eyes close in pain.
And then?
Annie rubs her brow with the knuckle of her thumb.
Why did this happen?
I don't ask those questions, Annie. And I didn't ask to love you, but I do. I'll always have that with me.
Tom.
Annie lifts her face from Tom's shoulder and looks him in the eyes.
Can we go for one last ride?
Settle him up.
Tom takes a long look at Annie, puts on his hat, and walks into the dark stable, leaving her silhouetted in the doorway, looking out past the wooden fences to the green fields and the grey hills beyond. She walks inside, picks up the bucket, and carries it out to the trailer. In the stable, Tom throws a saddle blanket over a horse. Range Rover pulls slowly out of the yard with the big cream trailer hitched behind. In the stable, Tom stands quite still, frowning slightly, listening. He closes his eyes and looks down with a little smile. He stands back from the horse and walks around it, flicking the bridle rope over its back. In her car, Anne is driving with tears running down her face. She glances down. Beside the gear lever, the lace Tom used for his trick is lying on top of the map. Annie's face wrinkles up. She reaches for the lace, rubs it between fingers and thumb, and brings it up to the steering wheel, where she twists it back and forth. The car runs through the wide green hayfield, and the blue-grey mountains rising behind. Coming out of a right-hand bend, the car reaches a long straight length of road, with the plains stretching out to the left, and a steep ridge above it on the right. On the ridge, a horseman gazes down, then swings his horse round and rides away. As the light fades, the trailer disappears. The horseman rides on, a tiny figure on the hilltop. Behind the vast landscape beyond the wide plain, tower the mountain crests. In white letters against the landscape, directed by Robert Redford. A dark horse gallops over sand dunes lit by the setting sun. Screenplay by Eric Roth and Richard LaGravenese. The horse gallops on behind the credits. Based on the novel by Nicholas Evans. Produced by Robert Redford and Patrick Markey. Starring Robert Redford. Kristen Scott Thomas. Sam Neill. Diane Wiest. Scarlett Johansson. Chris Cooper. Cherry Jones. Director of Photography, Robert Richardson, ASC. Production Designer, John Hutton. Edited by Tom Rolfe, ACE. Edited by Freeman Davis and Hank Corwin. Costumes designed by Judy L. Ruskin. Music by Thomas Newman. Co-producer Joseph Reedy. Associate producer Karen Tenhoff. Casting by Ellen Chenoweth and Gretchen Rennell-Court. This audio-described video has been made available by the RNIB Home Video Service. The description was written by Peter Wickham, narrator David Banks, engineer John Ellis.
The cast: Tom Booker, Robert Redford, Annie McLean, Kristen Scott Thomas, Robert McLean, Sam Neill, Diane Booker, Diane Wiest, Grace McLean, Scarlett Johansson, Frank Booker, Chris Cooper, Liz Hammond, Cherry Jones, Joe Booker, Ty Hillman, Judith, Catherine Bosworth, Twin 1, Austin Schwartz, Twin 2, Dustin Schwartz, Ellen Booker, Jeanette Nolan, Hank, Steve Fry, Smokey, Don Edwards, Lucy, Jesselyn Gilsig, Lester Peterson, William Buddy Bird, Local Tracker, John Hogarty, Park Ranger, Mike LaRonde, Dr. C.J. Burns, Nurse, Kathy Baldwin-Keenan, Barn Dance Vocalist, Alison Moore, Truck Driver, George Sack Jr., Nurse 2, Kelly Sweeney, Dave Gottschalk, voiceover, Steve Perlman, Office Worker 1, Joel Carter, Office Worker 2, Sonny Che, Office Worker 3, Ann Joyce, Schoolgirl 1, Tara Sobeck, Schoolgirl 2, Christiane Savidio, Neighbor, Marie Engel, Handsome Cowboy, Kurt Pate, Ranch Hand, Stephen Brian Connard, Roper, Tammy Pate, Pilots, Cliff Fleming, Dirk Vahl, Stunt Coordinator, Stunt Double Tom, Gary Coombs, Accident Stunt Coordinator, Mickey Gilbert, Stunt Double Grace, Julia Dare, Stunt Double Judith, Shelley S. Boyle, Stunt Double Annie, Marcia Holly, Stunt Double Liz, Terry Garland, Stunt Wrangler 1, Jeffrey M. Mayer, Stunt Wrangler 2, Bob Horegui, Stunt Wrangler 3, Rex Peterson, Stunt Passenger, Ben Scott, Utility Stunts, Michael E. Boyle, Casey Peterson, Tonya Smith, Pilgrim, Hightower, Cash, Moon, Maverick, Copper, Pet, Gulliver, Justin, Cowboy, Fall Guy, Monkey See, Monkey Do, Rimrock, Rambo, Snip. Executive Producer, Rachel Pfeffer. Unit Production Manager, Amy Herman. First Assistant Director, Joseph Reedy. Second Assistant Director, Daniel Rigby. Supervising Art Director, W. Stephen Graham. Assistant Art Director, Marion Colesby. Set decorators, Hilton Rosmarin, Gretchen Rao. On-set dresser, Grant Sawyer. Art department coordinator, Joan Schaefer. Property master, Ellen Freund. Assistant property master, Teddy Tate. Robert Redford's costumes designed by Bernie Pollock. Costume supervisor, Elaine Mazer. Set costumers, Kendall Herrera, Francine Ritaco, Laurie McClellan. Mr. Redford's costumer, David Page. Kristen Scott Thomas wardrobe provided by Calvin Klein Incorporated. Key makeup artist, Harry Lydiard. Head hairstylist, Bunny Parker. Ms. Wiest's makeup artist, Lee C. Harmon. Mr. Neal's hair and makeup artist, Mariko Watanabe. Makeup artist, Dennis Lydiard. Hairstylist, Gunnar Swanson. First assistant camera, Gregor Taverner. B camera operator, Robert K. Ulland, SOC. Sound mixer, Todd A. Maitland. Boom operator, T.J. O'Mara. Post-production supervisor, Suzanne Moore Harmon. Music supervisors, John Bissell and Kathy Nelson. Music editor, Bill Bernstein. Re-recording mixers, Tom Johnson, Laura Hirschberg, Dennis Sands. Sound designers, Gary Ridstrom, Steve Bodeker. Supervising sound editors, Richard Hymns, Frank Ulner. Sound effects editors, David C. Hughes, Larry Oatfield, Ken Fisher, Shannon Mills. Dialogue editors, Sarah Boulder, Uwe Stompfer-Oatfield, Claire Sanfilippo. Supervising ADR editor, Karen Wilson. ADR editor, Marilyn McCoppen. Foley editors, Sandino Bailo-Lape, Marianne Wild, Suzanne Popovich, Mary Helen Leisman. Visual effects supervisor, Peter Donan. Visual effects supervisor, Peter Crossman. Chief lighting technician, Ian R. Kincaid. Best Boy Electric, Mark Hadland. Key rigging gaffer, Tom Need. Key grip, Robin Knight. Best Boy grip, Steel Hunter. Dolly grip, Antonio V. Garrido. Key rigging grip, Scott A. Howell. Special effects coordinator, Neil Trofinovich. Set designer, Claire Scapola. Construction coordinator, Brian Markey. Scenic artists, John Kelly, Brian Stultz, Adam G. Markey, Mark Gilson. Storyboard artist, Sherman G. Labby. Choreographer, Catherine Kramer. Casting associates, Erica Arvold, Amanda Coblin. Extras casting, Betty Ann Conard. Equine technical advisors, Buck Brannaman, Kurt Pate, William Reynolds. Head trainer, Rex Peterson. Head wrangler, Mike Boyle. Wranglers, K.C. Peterson, Josh Hedrick, Guy C. Small. Craft services, Beverly Burton, Wendy Spurrier. Score recorded and mixed by Dennis Sands. Score recorded at Paramount Scoring Stage M, the Newman Scoring Stage, Todd A.O. Scoring Stage. Score mixed at Signet Sound Deluxe Studios. Orchestrations by Thomas Passatieri. Music contractor, Leslie Morris. Music preparation, Julian Bratter-Lyubov. Additional recording by Paul Wertheimer, Tom Hardesty. Music consultant, George Budd. Main end title sequences created by Imaginary Forces, Kyle Cooper. Opticals, Cinema Research Corporation. Negative cutter, Mo Henry. Color timer, Gil Carreras. New York unit. Art director, Raymond Kluger. Set decorator, Deborah Schutt. Chief lighting technician, Jerry DeBlau. Best Boy Electric, John Petralia. Key grip, Thomas Prate. Dolly grip, Ronald Burke. Key rigging grip, John Panuccio. Property master, Sandy Hamilton. Special effects coordinator, Richard Stutzman. Special effects assistant, Michael Bird. Production coordinator, Michael Giordano. Scenic artist, Elizabeth Lynn. On-set dresser, Joanne Atwood. Extras casting, Grant Wilfley casting. Second unit, Montana. Director, director of photography, Paul Ryan, ASC. First assistant director, Ruth A. Redfern. First assistant camera, Chris Lombardi, Eric L. Brown. Second unit, Saratoga Springs, director, Terry Leonard. Director, director of photography, Philip C. Pfeiffer. First assistant director, V.B. Borg. Production supervisor, Karen Hughes. Jackson unit, second unit director, Mickey Gilbert. Post-production sound services provided by Skywalker Sound, a division of Lucas Digital Limited, Marin County, California. The producers wish to thank Engel Ranch Incorporated, Woody's Special Effects, Todd Masters Company, Deere & Company, Isers, Ford Motor Company, Land Rover, Sooner Trailer Manufacturing Company, Woolrich Incorporated, Montana State Film Office, City of Livingston, Montana, City of Big Timber in the Boulder Valley, Montana, Saratoga County Chamber of Commerce, Yellowstone County Sheriff's Department, the El Dorado Tahoe Film Commission, the Amador County Film Commission, U.S. Forest Service, National Forest, Gallatin National Forest, Shoshone National Forest, U.S. Department of the Interior, Bureau of Land Management, Barstow Resource Center. Beverly Hills 90210, courtesy of Spelling Television Incorporated. The American Humane Association was present on set to monitor the animal action. Scenes which appear to place an animal in jeopardy were simulated. No animal was harmed in the making of this film. Songs. Chopsticks, written by Liz Phair. Battle Flag, written by Sean Smith and Steve Fisk, performed by Pigeonhead, courtesy of Sub Pop Records. The Loneliest, written by Beth Hooker and Randy Sharp, performed by Beth Hooker, courtesy of Windswept Pacific Entertainment Company. Sonata in F Major for Cello and Piano, Opus 5, No. 1, composed by Ludwig van Beethoven, performed by Yo-Yo Ma and Emmanuel Ax, courtesy of Sony Classical, by arrangement with Sony Music Licensing. Whoop-D-Y-O, performed by Don Edwards, courtesy of Western Jubilee Recording Company, LLC. Big Boils in Cowtown, written by Hoyle Nix. Texas Two Steps, written by Bob Wills. Adapter, written by Ramona Silva, performed by Ramona Silva, courtesy of Fingerprint Records Incorporated. Little Babies, written by Corin Tucker, Carrie Brownstein and Janet Weiss, performed by Slater Kinney, courtesy of Kill Rock Stars, by arrangement with Ocean Park Music Group. Everybody's Somebody's Daydream, written by Beth Hooker and Greg Sutton, performed by Beth Hooker, courtesy of Windswept Pacific Entertainment Company. Desperate Man Blues, written by John Fye, performed by John Fye, courtesy of Tacoma Records, Fantasy Incorporated. Cowboy Love Song, written by Gail Gardner, Don Edwards and Paul Stone, performed by Don Edwards, courtesy of Western Jubilee Recording Company, LLC. A Soft Place to Fall, written by Alison Moore and Gwil Owen, performed by Alison Moore, courtesy of MCA Records, Nashville. Soundtrack available on MCA Records, Nashville, MCA, Nashville. Original score album available on Hollywood Records, Hollywood Records. Aerial camera system provided by Spacecam Systems, Incorporated. Filmed in Panavision. Camera dollies by Chapman Leonard Studio Equipment. J. Dolan Communication. Produced and distributed on Eastman Film. Pascal Lighting. Prints by Technicolor. This picture made under the jurisdiction of IATSE, SEAL, affiliated with AFL, CIO, CLC. Copyright 1998 Touchstone Pictures, all rights reserved. This motion picture was created by Walt Disney Pictures and Television for purposes of copyright law in the United Kingdom. Distributed by Buena Vista Pictures Distribution.